Want to take a ride? From the high desert and the great American Southwest, exclusively on Sirius XM Radio, this is Dark Matter with your host, Art Bell. Now, here's Art.
Extraterrestrial radio, actually. Hi, everybody. Welcome to another week of Dark Matter. I am Art Bell. And I've got an awful lot for you tonight. Oh, man, it is packed tonight. And I'm going to do something I always want to do anyway. I don't even know where to begin. Listen, I don't make movie recommendations lightly. Really. I can think of maybe two or three movies in my life that I've ever recommended on the air. Of course, Contact. And now, Gravity. Oh, God, what a movie. I went to see it in IMAX 3D, Gravity, and it is a killer. I mean, it is, as far as I can see, with, you know, very tiny exception, it's flawless. It's so good that when you're sitting in the theater, make sure you see it in IMAX 3D. Don't mess around with the other stuff. When you see it in the theater, you will feel like you're in space. You will identify with the characters, and you're going to feel like you're there. So whatever you do, scrounge together the bucks and see Gravity in IMAX 3D if you can. Big time recommendation. Don't let it get away. Don't wait for the smaller screen. Trust me on this. There are a few movies that come out that deserve to be seen on the, you know, on the big screen. In 3D, and this is the one. All right, turning now to many comments on our guest list. You can readily see now that on Monday we have scheduled Dr. Roger Lear. On Tuesday we have Too Soon to Tell. I wonder, could that be an Indian name? Wednesday we have Check Back Later. And Thursday comes the very controversial Cannot Predict Now. it's an anti-poaching measure, folks. So be surprised every day for a while here. Okay, the ghost photo contest, I said, was over on Sunday because Keith Rowland, my webmaster extraordinaire, told me to say it was over on Sunday. What he didn't tell me is not this coming Sunday, but next Sunday, meaning you have one more week this week to get your ghost photographs in. Winner takes away a brand new Sirius XM radio and a one-year subscription to Sirius XM. So, hey, if you've got a ghost photo laying upstairs from your grandma, you know, scan it, get it over, whatever. Winner takes away a radio and a one-year subscription. Ghost stories come to me. Well, the ghost photographs, don't send them to me, please. Send them to webmaster@artbell.com. Webmaster@artbell.com. Ghost stories, on the other hand, come to me. That's for our show called Spooky Matter. Thank you, Bell Gab, for being the board to suggest that name. They're a board that follows the show. Or sometimes poisons it with comments.
We hate that guest. Hate him.
They're pretty brutal, but as I've said, vaguely lovable. Anyway, Spooky Matter stories. Just give me a little capsule version, a paragraph maybe or two at the most, and include your phone number, and maybe on Spooky Matter we will call you. All right, here comes the heavy-duty man, you gotta check it out stuff. The first thing I've got up is gonna just rock your world. We have talked many times of shadow people on this show. Right? Shadow people. A lot of people go, oh, come on. What if I were to tell you I've got a video? And it's a security camera piece of footage of a man being attacked by a shadow person. And if you can debunk this thing, have at it, baby. What happens in this video is a man's walking down the hall. You can see the dark shadow thing approach him. You can see it throw him on his, you know, face plant. I mean, he falls down. Then he's turned around. Then he is dragged by something invisible down the hall, or this shadow thing, whichever you want to believe. I'm telling you, this one is, well, it's either fake and CGI'd, right, by somebody who knows really what they're doing, or it's real. This thing is scary. I will be asking tomorrow's guest, too soon to tell, about this this video. But you can see it right now, and I recommend you you go up there and see it. It's an attack of a shadow being of a man. Simple as that. Caught on security camera footage, and it is really, really good. I mean, really good. So it's up on ArtBell.com right now. And when you go to ArtBell.com, you will see these various things flashing on the screen. Just don't touch the screen. Wait for the shadow person attack. Then the second item is going to blow your doors off, too. My second item is of a NASA scientist admitting to this lady who called him, interviewed him, that NASA has chemtrails. He uses the term chemtrails. Now, he says they are lithium gas. Lithium gas. No, not the lithium that, you know, you're given for a psychiatric condition of some sort. Lithium gas, he says, to track the movements of the atmosphere, high levels, whatever. But, you know, it's a metal, right? I think. And there is an old thing about what goes up must come down, right? So, I really think, Keith, I'll tell you what Keith said. He said, I think it's the first admission of a government official of anything like this. And Dr. Lear, if you're there, just hang in there. I've got a couple things I've got to do tonight, or that I'm going to do tonight. I don't have to do them. And then the final item, I mean, when you hear a NASA scientist admitting chemtrails, yeah, we're doing it, you know, that rocks you back a little bit. Normally, you hear about chemtrails and you go, you know, I don't know. I really don't know. But good heavens to Betsy. When you hear a NASA scientist say, yeah, chemtrails are chemtrails, it blew me away. So there is that. And then finally, this may not be the real McCoy, because I admit there are some problems in my view of the way this thing moves. It's a dragon. Now, you don't get videos of dragons just every day. It's a dragon over England. And it looks awfully realistic, except, in my opinion, for sometimes the way it moves its wings, or I'm just looking for a problem with it. I don't know. Maybe hooey, but it's a dragon. Somebody got it on video over England, and you don't get dragons every day. In fact, I have never had such a giant load of really, really good videos to present to all of you. Where are they all? Simple. ArtBell.com. www.artbell.com. I would like for you, if you have a moment, I know you're busy because I'm sending you to do all these things, go to the internet and look up the words to Stairway to Heaven, song Stairway to Heaven. If you have never actually read the words to Stairway to Heaven, I would like you to go to the internet and look them up, because I'm going to play it, the whole darn thing. I said it's my show, I can do what I want, so I'm going to do it when I come back from break before Dr. Lear. Okay, a second oarfish. Now, these oarfish are really rare, deep trawlers in the ocean. You don't see them unless you're in a deep sub or something. Has washed ashore in California. This is not good. or fish generally are, if they're ever seen at all, very rare, maybe seen in Japan, somewhere like that, right? But now a second oarfish has come ashore in California. Now, they're looked, oarfish are looked at kind of like comets. They portend change and possibly doom. Doom, I tell you. I'm not necessarily a believer, but probably not good. You know, we've got this Fukushima thing going on, right? And I'll leave it at that. A low-pitched droning sound has tormented residents of Southampton now for 18 months. No relief. No explanation in sight. It's every night. So some people have resorted to using sleeping pills or moving away just to get a good night's sleep. Because this thing wakes you up. But England is only the latest in an ever-growing lengthy list of cities and towns plagued by exactly this sort of sound around the world. We've had it here in the U.S. Weird, strumming, thumming, thumping sounds under the ground that will not allow you to sleep. Update on Comet Ison. It suggests the comet is still intact, despite the predictions of many that the icy nucleus might disintegrate as the sun warms it. So we could still be in for a treat. Closest pass on November 28th. Oh, I got this email. It says, Art, as soon as I unwrap my new dark matter mug, my cat Birdie came to check it out. Been enjoying the show every night over the internet. Now, shopping for portable XM radio use on the road, in my car, and on my motorcycle. Now, that is devotion. Listening on a motorcycle, what you should be doing is paying attention to what you're doing. Anyway, he sent a picture of his cat with a little face stuffed down into the Art Bell cup, dark matter cup. My cats do the same thing. They don't like water from any other source than a human cup. I think that my cats have calculated that if it's in a human cup, it's better water. Better. It's got to be better. And if it's milk, that's good too. So you're probably going, ew, you let your cats drink out of your glass? Yeah, we do. We'll talk about that sometime. All right, coming up in just a little while, Dr. Roger Lear, and Dr. Lear, relax, we have lots of time. This is Sirius XM, where, well, there's virtually time for everything. Raging in the nighttime. This is Dark Matter. From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I'm Art Bell. And it's going to be quite a night. Stay right where you are. All that stuff up on artbell.com. So if you haven't done it yet, for God's sakes, don't do it if you're in a truck. Especially if you're on the road. You know, if you're stopped, maybe. But otherwise, don't get tempted. Somehow I have this vision of some guy in an 18-wheeler, you know, with a, I don't know, iPhone 5 in his hand, trying to manipulate his way to artbell.com. No, don't do it. Dr. Roger K. Lear is author of Aliens and the Scalpel, first and second edition. In other words, two of them. UFO crash at in Brazil, rather. Casebook, Alien Implants, Chopped Liver, and three other books published outside the U.S. has been said to have been one of the world's most important leaders in physical evidence research involving the field of ufology. He and his surgical team have performed 16 surgeries on alleged alien abductees. This resulted in the removal of 17 separate and distinct objects suspected of being alien implants. These objects have been scientifically investigated by some of the most prestigious labs in the world. Their findings have been baffling and some comparisons have been made to meteorite samples. Dr. Lear continues to investigate the physiological and biological aspects of the abduction phenomenon. He has also formed a non-profit organization for this purpose called ANS Research, Inc. It has been a long time since I've heard Dr. Lear's voice. Doctor, welcome.
Hello, Art. Yes, indeed. It's been way, way too long.
Really good to hear your voice.
It's a real pleasure being on the show again, and it takes me back a few years.
Well, incredibly happy to have you. It's a whole new ball game up here, buddy. We have time. You just wouldn't believe how much time we have and how few commercials we have. Oh, baby, it's something else. All right. You have done some of the most incredible work in ufology, period. It's as simple as that. I mean, taking implants out of people. And, of course, at the same time, you've been a ufologist. So you're a doctor. You're a ufologist. I don't know. You tell me about yourself.
Well, I got real busy. I was interrupted for a bit with a very nasty, nasty virus, which today is called shingles, which led to a 7-hour surgery and about 20 days in the hospital. So that kind of put me out of commission for a while, but I'm back.
You know, I have heard that shingles are the single most painful thing that can happen to a human being. Is that?
That is 100% on. That is the truth. But the subject of shingles from a medical aspect has been absolutely aborted. It's been turned into something of an absolute lie, and I was somehow the victim of one of those lies. Shingles has absolutely or nothing to do with the chicken pox virus.
Oh no, they didn't lie to me on TV, did they? If you had chickenpox, you already have the shingles virus in you.
Now, if you believe that, I've got several bridges that I want to sell.
Well, you're kind of in the bridge selling business anyway, right? A little bit.
Right. But anyway, any of our listeners can check this out if they want to do a little simple research. I looked at the virus that caused shingles so many years ago. It's funny it got renamed because it was called herpes zoster. And it was comparing that to herpes simplex, which is the virus that causes chicken pox, was like come looking at a German shepherd and squeak your cat.
Right.
Incidentally, I don't know if you ever knew, but you have Squeak the cat, I have Squeak the rabbit. Maybe never meet.
Maybe. Listen, are you healed? You're better now?
Yeah. As I said, I'm back doing my thing again and have been for a while. I still
they
have.
Didn't, they didn't find anything else in there, did they, with the shingles?
No, but I had to wind up having two arterial bypasses done because I wound up with a hole about as big as a baseball in my ankle, and that had to be filled in with a graft and all that sort of wonderful things. That, yeah, so it's been quite an experience. But
yeah, you've really been through it. Through it. All right. Okay.
But, you know, I made the best of it. I got a new book coming out, which should be out next month, which I can't remember. I can't mention the name because of the agreement with the publisher. Ooh. But I can say that the foreword was written by Dr. Edgar Mitchell, the astronaut from Apollo 14.
Excellent, so, of course.
Really looking forward to that coming out. And it's got a lot of the new information, which we haven't talked about in years. But we found stuff that has gone far, far beyond what we had talked about in latter years.
Can you talk about it later tonight?
I would love to. In fact,
really? Okay.
Keith put a report up on the website. So if people want to go to artbell.com, they can take a look. There's some pictures up there, too. They are ultra-micro photographs. And when we talk about this, then they'll be able to actually see the things that I'm talking about.
Okay. All right. Excellent. I've got the website right next to me, so I'll be going over there to take a look myself. All right. Are you still performing surgeries for the removal of alien implants?
Yes. In short, we're getting ready to perform two more of them. All I need to do now is put in place the funding. And we have a couple of individuals who I think are going to come through with that. So we'll have at least two more to run through the fires of research examination.
All right. If I were to come to you, doctor, and say, and being very serious, and say, look, I really think I was abducted. I think that I've got an implant right here. I'll say my leg, just for, as an example. I've got an implant in my leg. It occurred or happened during the abduction. I've got a little scar here left from it that you can see. I'm kind of curious how you would vet me. In other words, how you would treat me and how it would go.
Basically, we would begin by putting you through a rather rigorous examination in relation to your experience, and we really wouldn't expect to see a scar. So if you had a scar, we would probably say, bye-bye.
All right. The scar's gone. It's in there. Magically, it's in there. I have no scar. Now what?
Okay, now you say you have an implant there, so I have to know that's true. So along with your...
I'm telling you it's true, doctor.
I believe you 100%, except I have to send this stuff to the lab and another scientist, so they have to believe you too. So you have to show me some x-rays or at least a CAT scan or something like that that shows you have a foreign object. Now, we don't know what it is, but at least we know you have a foreign object.
Okay.
That's
so,
number
so in other
one.
Words, all right, so you would send me away to get either an x-ray, if it would show in an x-ray, or, I don't know, an MRI, whatever, at my own expense. I'd have to pay for it, right?
No. No examinations, treatment, or surgery that is under the auspices of ANS Research is there any charges made. Also, if we do find something and you want it taken out, you has to be your idea. You want it, not ours.
Well, I hate it. It's in there, and it's bothering me, so I want it gone, of course. Now, do I have to sign a lot of papers and stuff saying that I will donate my object to you when we're all done?
Exactly. It becomes the property of not ANS Research. It becomes the property of the civilization of this planet. And we promise to keep you totally informed of any information which is elicited from the research that this reveals. Every bit of your personal information is kept 100% confidential. So if a television program comes along and wants to do a show and we want to show them the footage, you don't want your face shown or you don't want your object shown, that's a liberty that we assign to the individual.
Now, to be honest with you, it would depend on where it was. I mean, if it was an embarrassing spot, I probably wouldn't want my face shown.
There are people that don't want their face shown. There are people that want their voices disguised. We have done television shows of that nature. And there are people that don't want to be on TV or have anything mentioned that might give anybody a clue as to what they are. Now, sometimes have occupational hazards because they're afraid that, even scientists pray to higher masters. They don't want to lose their income or be embarrassed or called a nutcase or whatever might happen. So they're just, we don't, we respect that, and we don't use them. But we do keep the data, and the data is available to the world, because I'm not doing this for myself. I'm not doing it for fun, and I'm not making a buck. I'm broke as it could be, especially after going through this illness. But, you know, through the help of some very kind people, including someone we both know, and I'm going to give him credit on the air, which is Robert Bigelow, was
Robert. Yay, Robert. Yes, what a guy.
Just a wonderful, wonderful, kind person who is totally responsible for getting this information out to the world. And, you know, when I was ill, he was just absolutely wonderful.
Robert is a very, very good friend of mine, Roger, and you know the work he's doing now. He's solidly now into aerospace and launching satellites like crazy and getting ready to put a hotel in space.
Absolutely, and he deserves it. This is something that he worked for. This has been a goal of his for many, many years since he established NIDS. Which helped me greatly with the research. I also understand historically that he had purchased a radio station in the Union Plaza Hotel, where a very strange show began, with a very famous person now by the name of Art Bell.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. He's really special. Do you know what he did? He actually, a few years ago, landed a helicopter in my backyard. That was quite an affair, boy. I'll tell you what. Yeah, the dust that came up when that thing landed. Landed a hotel in my backyard, flew myself and my wife into Vegas, and we got a real inside look at satellites preparing to launch, the whole assembly facility there. Oh, God, it was incredible. So he's done years of work since then. I guess it's about time for me to have Robert back on the air.
Yeah.
All right. Well, all right. Back now. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I suggested to your program producer, Paul, that I would like to see Robert back on the air because you know, like you mentioned, he's in a wonderful position right now. He's going to do some firsts in space that have never been done before in cooperation with a few other people who are making headlines. But Bob always seems to stay, you know, out of the current. You don't see his name in the news. You do see these other guys. But
I know. You know who he reminds me of, Roger?
I know who you're going to say. Probably Howard Hughes.
No. Although there's reason to make that comparison, but no. No, he reminds me of the billionaire in Contact, the one who's on the screen to Jodie Foster and leans down and looks into the camera and says, "Wanna take a ride?"
Yes.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely true. So he's been, as I said, most of the things, you know, let's talk about the truth. Most of the things that have happened in ufology that have made books and comments for all kinds of television and radio shows have been sponsored by Bob Bigelow.
That's right.
You know, I was shocked to find out that the Rockefeller event that occurred years and years and years ago. Well, Rockefeller did pay for some of that. He paid for a quarter of it. Bob paid the rest.
Yep. He's behind a lot of research, serious and expensive research in ufology.
Yeah, absolutely. He's, you know, one of the people on the face of this planet that is responsible for a number of different things. Now, there are a lot of other people getting on the bandwagon at the present time because I believe finally the world is waking up to a new reality. Now, we've got Stephen Bassett, for example, who did the citizens hearing in Washington, D.C., 5 days long of testimony. I was there. I was on the last day, which was a lucky thing for me because I got to hear what everybody else said, so
right,
I knew the way to go. But, you know, it was an intense, very, very intense feeling to sit there and relate this information to, you know, 80 years or 60 years of congressional abilities that the panel had, and you know, to get to know them through the years, and I learned, you know, probably as much about the government of the United States as they learned about ufology.
All right. When we get back, we're going to turn to specifics. Dr. Roger Lear, hang in there, and we'll be right back from the high desert and the great American Southwest. This is Dark Matter, raging in the nighttime, exclusively on Sirius XM3. Now, once again, Dr. Roger Lear. Dr. Lear, we've got a subscriber base on XM of around 27 million people. That's a bunch of people. And, you know, a lot of them haven't ever heard my program before. I had Whitley on about, I don't know, within the month. And we all know, I know anyway, Whitley had an implant attempted to be removed from his ear. And there are those who doubt what Whitley says. I'm not one of them because I know the man really well. But you were part of the team that tried to remove that implant from Whitley's ear. Am I right?
Partially right. I met the physician who was the guy that tried to remove it from the ear, and had quite a conversation with him, and I listened to his explanation of what he saw, how he panicked when it moved out of the way.
I would. And, in other words, when the scalpel came near, to be clear, the surgeon says the implant actually moved in Whitley's ear, yes?
That's correct. It moved out of the way, but he was able to get a little piece of it, which was sent in for pathology, and there was some mysterious material, but there wasn't enough there to really make a determination what it was. And then later, Whitley wanted me to take another shot at it, and I said, well, you know, if that's what you want to do, and you're 100% sure, I'll do it. And then he said, can you guarantee me that after it's done, I won't be dead? And I said, no.
That's a stopper.
Yep.
That's a showstopper.
So
I remember, maybe you can tell me why doctors do this, Dr. Lear, but when we had Asia, when my wife was in labor, actually, you know, the doctor had been telling her, it was a C-section, and the doctor had been telling her every visit when we'd go, you know, for the normal checkup, everything is fine, everything is great, it'll be a C-section, piece of cake, nothing to it. And then when you're actually in the hospital, you're in the bed, you're in the middle of labor, the doctor stands at the end of the bed and says, I need to read you this list of risks. And there's this long list of, well, you might stop breathing, you might die. And, you know, it's like a showstopper. Of course, in that case, you can't stop the show. But, my goodness, they wait until the last moment to redo the risks.
Well, that's not right, because you're supposed to have that list all done and signed before you ever plunk your fanny in the bed.
Well, she might have done that. She might have signed and not exactly known, you know, I mean,
well,
you get a lot of papers you have to sign.
Really not too good bedside manner to, I suppose I went to an ophthalmologist and I was going to have a cataract done, and I signed all the stuff, and at the last moment he says, well, this procedure is just an ordinary procedure, we've done thousands of them, but yes, you could wind up blind.
Yes, that's right. So anyway, Whitley said, you can't guarantee me I won't die, and you said no, and that stopped that, so.
Yeah, so but it's still in his ear. It still moves. At least it was the last time I talked to him. But I can't make that kind of a guarantee. You know, Lord knows what could happen. We don't know what's going to happen from day to day if you never touch his ear or whatever.
Especially if you carried it away, I guess, and began chasing it around his head.
Yeah, he was actually telling me he had a meeting with one of his publishers, and it got bright red and hot. He had to run out and go to the restroom and put some cold water on it to cool it off.
It's not that funny. I have seen his ear turn red. I've seen it myself.
Yeah, he showed it to me one time, too, when it was glowing beautifully red. Not to change gears, but I just want to take this opportunity to thank a few people. One is Keith Rowland, who did a wonderful job of getting the immense amount of material I put up on the website up in time for the show. And I didn't get a chance to thank you for the great, wonderful, marvelous, fantastic quote that you gave me that we used in on the back of the book, I believe, for a UFO crash in Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
That was just something that I will always thank you for the rest of my life.
Oh, thank you. And you're right about that. There's a very great deal of photography up on the website, and you can follow along, folks, by going to artbell.com. Just find the name Roger Lear. He's our only guest listed with a human name. Click on that, and then you'll come to the material here, which we're about to talk about. So you might as well get it on the screen, along with so much else to watch up there. Now, I'm not sure where to begin. I guess I'll leave it to you. There's so much material that we have to go through. But, I'm right at the first picture. 4:59 a.m., May 15th of 2009, and I guess I'm looking at something that was taken out of somebody, or what am I seeing?
Well, I believe if you're seeing a date, you're probably looking at a UFO, and that's probably part of the material from the Comburgas, Turkey UFO, which showed up 3 years in a row. I just happened to be there. And looking through the camera when that was filmed. So there's a large amount of material on that UFO. Now, the camera we were using was a camera with a 300-millimeter lens and an electronic doubler. That means that you can double it to 600 millimeters. Let me explain what the situation was at the time. There were three conferences that went on each year. And following the conference, during the conference, let's look go back, UFOs were passing over the conference center like looking at the traffic on a freeway.
Where was this?
This was in Istanbul, Turkey.
Right, okay. Just to give you some idea, Doctor, when I look at this photograph, it could either be a large object far away, or it could have been something you removed from somebody's ear. In other words, in the first two photographs, there is no reference for size.
Right. It was when we get farther into it, you'll see the estimates of our. This was taken out over the sea, and it was from the European coast. So. The investigations that were done on the video gave us, maybe it might have been 20 miles away.
Wow.
Also, the sky was clear, but the moon was bright, and the craft was being lit by the moon. However, if you go down to the following pictures, you'll see that as we push closer and closer and closer on the craft, we can see that the front end of it is rounded.
Oh, my. Oh my. I'm looking at the video now. Oh, my.
Oh, my is right, because this has got to be. And after you've looked at the whole thing, I'm sure you're going to agree. This has got to be the finest footage that was ever taken of a UFO. Not only that, but it shows the occupants.
I think I see them. I have a question right away, if you don't mind. My God, that's incredible. I'm running the video right now. That really is incredible. What is it, Dr. Lear, that lights up the craft or puts a light on the craft? Can you tell me? It kind of comes and goes.
The craft is being lit from the outside. Now, the camera is on a tripod, but there is a slight wind blowing. And the camera is focused on the front of the craft, but the craft does move. And you'll see that in one of the shots there, it kind of turns sideways. And although from the front of it, it looks like it's saucer-shaped, you'll see it's not. It's boomerang.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It is definitely a wow. This is really good stuff. You want to click on the video, folks, and just sort of let it run in the background as we're talking. And I do think it looks like you can see two occupants in what would be some kind of cockpit, right?
Right. There's three ports that show, one in the middle and one on either end. Now, as you get farther down into the video, and you get not the video, but when you get down into the stills, and we get to the analysis part, the analysis on this video was done by the University of Istanbul, which is a government university, and it created a stir in all the newspapers, national newspapers in Turkey, all the television stations.
I should hope to kiss a cow. I'm sitting here watching this now, as I hope a lot of the audience is, and... Wow. This is, and the other thing is, this is going on while you're at a UFO conference in Turkey.
That's right. This is right after the conference ended. We went down the European coast to the small town called Comburgas, and we stayed up from midnight till 5 o'clock in the morning, filming out over the sea. And in one instance, this was 3 years in a row. I think it was the last year. I'm not 100% sure. I think it was the last year, 2009. Jaime Masson and his crew were there, and they were filming it also. So there was two sets of original videos that were taken of this. Now, Jaime had analysis done in Mexico. Hakan Agolan, who's the head of Sirius TV and Sirius UFO organization in Turkey, had the analysis done by the University of Istanbul, and then it went to a fellow, Mario Valdez, in Chile, who used a frame splitter. Now, for those of the audience that's listening, a frame splitter splits each picture that goes by the television camera lens into two what we call fields. Now, the film goes by the lens at 30 frames per second. So when you split it in half, you get 60 frames per second. So he studied each individual field, and his concentration was on the occupants of the craft. And you're going to see when you click on the investigation part of this, his entire report is there, and he has made specific outlines and drawings of what these entities were doing while we were filming them.
Holy moly. This is such clear stuff. Was it just basically hovering out over the ocean in one place, or was there much movement associated with it? Because to, you know, keep the camera on it at this distance, it must have been relatively stationary.
It was relatively stationary, but for whatever the reason, it did make slight turns to one direction and then slight turns to the other direction, because sometimes you're getting a better view of the port that's on the left side. Sometimes you're getting a better view of the port that's on the right side. And then finally it turns sideways, and you can see that it's not a disc. But, you know, remember Bill McDonald?
Oh, sure.
Well, Bill McDonald, you know, made a drawing of what they considered the Roswell craft to look like. And, boy, if this doesn't fit that drawing, you know.
It sure does. It's a definite boomerang shape. And it's also got significant – there's two different shots. One where you've got the thing strobing lights all over the place like crazy. And
right.
Then many shots where it's not strobing lights like that.
Right. And, you know, why, what are they doing, what's their intent? We've had a few people that tried to debunk it and say that, oh, this was nothing but the reflection of lights from a fixed source on the water and stuff like that. I had one the other day that got me through the website, and he said he's a video analyst, and this has been photoshopped because you can see where the 009, when you analyze it, looks like it's below the other. Well, in the first place, I wrote him back and I said, you know, I thank you for the time that you took for your analysis, but number one, please give me your credentials, and number two, please tell me where you got a copy of the original film from, because there's only two copies in the world. With that, I never heard from him again.
Well, I'm about six minutes and 40 seconds into it. This is astounding stuff, folks. Wow. What a good lens. I mean, that thing's way out there, and when you get the camera just right, you're able to get very close to it. Wow. That's
something. We surveyed the whole area before we ever filmed anything. We looked for oil derricks. We looked for other platforms, light sources, ships, reflective objects, and there was nothing. I mean, there was nothing out over the water. Now, I don't know if you saw the part yet, but there was a dog standing there on the beach looking at the object, and he's just barking his barker off.
Yes, I absolutely saw it. That's just a remarkable video, and I don't know why it's the first time that I've ever seen it. Well, I was out of the country, and now I'm down to the still photographs, which, wow. These, I guess, are frame grabs? Is that what I'm looking at?
Yes, these are frame grabs.
Holy smokes. The one, June 8th, 2008. Now, that's a year, nearly a year before the other one, right?
That's correct. They were,
Speaking of dogs.
Speaking of dogs, yeah. You talk about dogs barking on the beach. You see, these are so smart that they, talking back to me.
So, in other words, this craft had been visiting this area for quite a long time.
Well, now, I discussed this with one of our physicists, and he came up with a very interesting approach. Why did it show up just about the same time for 3 years in a row at the same time of the night?
Really?
At the same place, at the same geographical location? And he said this might be an indication of time travel. And what we're looking at might be a time loop.
Wow.
And he said,
all right, I have a question, an obvious question, I guess. If this craft had been showing up night after night after night in the same place, time loop or not, and that's something we can talk about, why wouldn't a local military have sent something out to try and figure out what was violating their airspace?
In Turkey, that's kind of a strange situation because in Turkey, there's so many UFOs that unless they interfere somehow with human activity, no military force goes up, no police helicopters, no nothing. Nobody does anything. It's so common. You can read about it in the newspapers. You can hear about it on a television show. It's not that exciting. It's like you were talking about the 18-wheel rig. You know, if it was an 18-wheel rig and it was a 1941 model, that might create some great, news. But when you're in a country where it's so open, now they have had instances. For example, in Turkey, there was two instances where commercial airlines became so close to circular craft. A saucer-shaped craft on landing that they became dangerous, and their version of the FAA was really worried about it. Now, that did cause some military and commercial stir.
Well, you did mention Jaime Monzon, and you know what? Down in Mexico, it also got so common. In fact, they actually had a couple of, I believe, collisions between UFOs and commercial aircraft, but it got so common in Mexico that otherwise it was like almost like part of daily life or something.
Oh, yes. You know, that occurred after the eclipse. It was, you know, like every day. And the same way in Brazil. Brazil, I've been there, I don't know, at least 12 times. And it's so common in Brazil. It's the only country I know of in the world where you can pick up a tour guide and they tell you where to go see UFOs.
Do you have any thoughts, Doctor, on why these other countries are so frequently visited? We had our Phoenix Lights, but I mean, other than that, in recent years, there hasn't been much here compared to, say, Turkey or, Mexico and South America. And any thoughts on why?
Well, I do. I think that we think that we're not as visited as much as these other countries. But that's because the cloak of secrecy is so strong here that when people talk about it, report it or whatever, it never goes anywhere. There is a blackout on this information, and this is what we were trying to do with the citizens' hearing. And it's my hope. Now, I just was served on a committee with Senator Gravel again for you had James Fox on for 710, and I was supposed to be in that film, but because of a mix-up, something happened at the last minute. I wasn't in it. But just the night before the filming, I was with Senator Gravel, and they are pushing forward. And I think this is really going to happen. We're going to get a hearing before the General Assembly of the United Nations.
Really?
I believe so. They've got he's got a very powerful group in Washington, and he's donated a corporation to the cause, which is a nonprofit, 501c3. And it looks like he's got the contacts and the ability to raise the money to get this done. So it's not just him. It's Congresswoman Carolyn Kilpatrick with several of the other members of the committee that were there, too, that are all for getting this done. And you should have heard the difference between their opening statements and their closing statements. I mean, they said they were open. But after 5 days of testimony from 9 to 5 every day, listening intently to what everybody had to say, they went, I'm sure 180 degrees. And they came out and said, this is not a U.S. problem. This is a situation which is worldwide. So, we're not going to get the representation from Congress, but Steve Bassett is still under the opinion that if we drive
hard
enough,
he's plugging away,
and he's fortunately been able to raise the money outside the country to do things like this. So these events are tremendous, and they're tremendously expensive.
Okay, when. You know what? Let's take our break here and pick up on the other side. I want to talk a little bit about that time thing, the possibility that it was movement in time again and again and again. All right. Dr. Roger Lear is here. He is a surgeon. He removes alien implants from people. I can't believe it. I keep getting these messages on the wormhole saying, Art, where's the video? I can't find the video. Oh, please. Go to artbell.com. Look, scroll down a little bit for the name Dr. Roger Lear, scheduled for today. Then click on his name. First, you'll see some still photographs. Then you will see the video in question. It's a little better than, I think it's about 6 minutes, 40 seconds, something like that. And this is really good stuff. And, again, Dr. Lear said it came back over a very long period of time and suggested that perhaps it was some sort of time loop, which is interesting. If it were some sort of time loop, then one would imagine or guess that it might not actually physically be there, and yet it was able to be photographed, both video and still photographs. So a time loop Doctor, you think you really think that's possible? It's fascinating.
Well, that's what, you know, a lot of my material doesn't come from me because I really don't consider myself a scientist. You know, I do have degrees in, you know, medical biology and so on.
Right.
But I'm not a PhD material specialist. You know, I don't have degrees in physics and so on. But we have four nuclear physicists now on the board of NS Research. The latest one came out of the citizens' hearing, Dr. Tom Vallone, who had the ability to put up a formula at the hearing on two giant television screens, a formula for zero-point energy. There it is.
Really?
I mean, we were looking at it. The Congress people were looking at it. Everybody was looking at it. There it is. He says, this is the formula. So, you know, these are the kind of people that I respect their opinion. So someone comes to me and said, perhaps, why you're getting this around the same time of the year, 3 years in a row, is that these entities have the ability for time travel. Now, they could have been doing this for a specific reason. You know, they obviously know our history. They certainly know a lot about human beings, the anatomy, physiology, psychology. There seems to be a few things that certain numbers of races that are non-terrestrial don't know, that they're still learning about us. David Jacobs with his hybrid program, I agree that they are making hybrids, but I unfortunately don't agree that that's the only thing that's being accomplished by the abduction phenomena.
Well, you brought up the name Dr. Jacobs, so I really have to ask you, there's a great argument in ufology about whether these beings are friendly or not friendly, foe. And Dr. Jacobs, by and large, believes that they are not friendly at all. I wonder if you buy into that, or how do you feel about it?
I can't take science and agree with that opinion, because if they were not friendly, why would we be even here having this conversation? And now, one of our nuclear physicists, Dr. Robert Koontz, is an ex-naval physicist and with a background that's a mile long. I didn't send that along because it's just too much material, and perhaps we can talk about it another time. But
sure.
He's one of the physicists that's on our board, and he has made mathematical calculations based on the isotopes that are in the implant objects as to their relationship to the Big Bang theory. In other words, if we take the date of the Big Bang, he can calculate a constant, which he can use in a formula. And he figured out mathematically two things, which have been so far not disputed, that the elements that we're finding in these objects, these isotopes, come from one-third away across the Milky Way galaxy.
Wow.
From a civilization which he says is 80 to 100 million years older than we are.
How are they able to make that determination?
It's all with advanced mathematics, and it boils down to basically how Uncle Stan Friedman can say, if you live in New Jersey, you don't go to the Bronx to buy your bread. So if the materials come from a certain area, then you can tell by how long it took the change from one isotope to the next element, how long it took to get there, and you can figure out the age of the civilization. That's the best as I am able to explain it. It's much more complex. So, again, I have to take the word of a noted world-renowned physicist.
Okay. How, with respect to the implants that have been removed and tested, how many of them have actually shown isotopes that would lead a person away from Earth?
Well, we've done 16 cases, removed 17 objects, and you were correct in your summation at the beginning. One of them did have two. Now, in the early days of research, and this is probably what I was talking about so many years ago, the first test that came from Los Alamos laboratories in New Mexico Tech compared them to meteorite samples. So we've gone a long, long, long way since those days because science, our science, has advanced also. We have better machinery, better mechanics. To give you an instance, your question relative to the numbers of the objects that we've removed, how many of them show extraterrestrial properties. We know that most of them are showing extraterrestrial properties, but we don't know until we look. So now we're able to take advantage of going back to what we have left of the original objects,
right,
and looking at them again. To give you an example, a scanning electron microscope, which uses a high voltage, a kilovoltage, to put out an electron beam, and then the electron beam can give us pictures at various depths through a material object. Years ago, when we started doing this, let's say 10,000 kilovolts, you were able to get maybe 100,000 times magnification. If you went higher than that, you get what's called scattering, which is just a bunch of electrons bouncing all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't get a decent picture. Now, with 10,000 kilovolts, you can get magnifications of around 500,000 to 600,000 times. You go up to 20,000 kilovolts, and you can get very close to 1,000,000 magnification. We can get down things now to looking at one atom. And that's one of the things that we see in these objects are apertures that are only one atom wide. The next thing that we've found, and I'm kind of getting ahead of the game here, but are carbon nanotubes, both single-walled and double-walled carbon nanotubes.
Whoa, slow down. You're saying some of these implants contain carbon nanotubes?
That's correct. And 8 years, 9 years ago, academic scientific community was arguing whether a carbon nanotube could even exist.
Because
it doesn't exist in nature, and you can't make it. It can't be done. Well, here they are. And now our objects, you know, one of them, when we took it out, was 42 years old. So,
right, you know, exactly right. Way ahead of anything we could have done anywhere near that time, and probably even now.
Yeah, you could dump
wow.
money in the black budget. We're in projects in the world, and you wouldn't have come up with a carbon nanotube. But these go far, far more complex than what is even talked about today, because you can build a single wall, you know, a tube, but you can also build a double wall. That's what we find. And then let's compare it to those that don't understand what a carbon nanotube is. It's a carbon atom which is connected to another carbon atom, and it forms a chain, which is in a circle. And then you extend this chain, and you get a chain of carbon nanotubes. Atoms, and this is a carbon nanotube. So you can double a wall, and you can have twice the thickness, but there's a hole in the center. And the hole in the center can be what we call dope with other material. For example, one of the uses today that they're talking about medically is to put, let's say, an antibiotic or an anti-cancer agent, let's look at it that way, into a small carbon nanotube, and that's called doping. And then you inject that into a malignant tumor, and the carbon nanotube then releases the anti-cancer drug directly into the tumor, and you don't destroy the surrounding tissue. So there's lots of applications that are being talked about today, but now we can make them, but we can't make them the complex way that we find them in these objects. Now, the other thing is, how do you combine a carbon nanotube into molten metal?
No idea.
It's,
a,
no idea. No one else that has any idea either. But here it is, folks. You know, you look at it, you see it, you know, with new equipment. And these carbon nanotubes are then, you know, let's take a wire, for example, without any insulation on it. And you take the wire and you wrap two wires together. You know, and then you continue doing this until you have, a cable. And then you throw some insulation on it, and you got an insulated cable. So this is what we find with carbon nanotube technology in these objects. Now, where do they go? They go with a pattern like a circuitry. And remember, we're looking under an electron microscope that's looking at this about 750 to 850,000 times magnification. And they run into what we call orthorhombic crystals. I know that sounds tremendously right. complex, but it's not.
Way over my head.
It's a very easy to explain. It's a crystal that's a rectangle. Simple
okay.
rectangle.
All right. Here's a question for you. Here's a question for you, Doctor. Do you have any knowledge of, or guesses even, how these various implants interact or associate with human biology?
We have some idea. We used to think that they were being powered by the nervous system, as is UCLA now powering small motors to run servos in artificial prosthetic devices. But now we've kind of changed our opinion because we know that you can broadcast energy. And if you broadcast energy, for example, by use of a scalar wave, you can power these objects remotely. So let's just accept that as a possibility. The next thing, in reference to your question of how it's used in the human body, obviously these things we know are being used to relay information, some kind of data, a data pattern.
How do we know that? And what? For example, those who have had the implants, what are they saying? Are they saying, I hear voices, or I have ideas that I don't recognize as my own, or what?
Oh, that's a wonderful question. Now, here I'm going to bring it home right in your own backyard.
Sure.
We have a radio frequency detector, and we've been able to detect radio frequencies coming out of these objects.
All right, stop right there. You're finally into an area where I sort of know what I'm talking about. What range of frequencies are you talking about, and what kind of emitted signal are you talking about?
They're in the FM band, and I unfortunately don't have the exact figures, which goes out to about a 10-digit number, but they're both in the kilohertz and megahertz range in the FM band.
You're talking about the commercial broadcast FM band?
This is a band I was able to, let's see how to put this. I was able to view a secret chart with all the frequencies from every satellite that is circling our planet put up by every country. And these okay. are in a category of fixed or mobile deep space frequencies.
Okay, but when you're talking about the frequency emission from the from these implants, I mean, we're talking about two different things here. You're talking about a list of frequencies from satellites orbiting Earth or whatever. And I'm talking about the implants themselves apparently transmitting some sort of signal. Is
yeah,
that correct?
Yes. Yes. Okay. They're both in the kilohertz and megahertz range. As I said, I don't have the readings. I'd be happy to send them to you. I would
very much enjoy that.
Now, one of the things we don't have, and we keep trying to get someone to donate this to us, but we have the radio frequency detector, but we don't have a radio frequency analyzer, so we can't capture the wave.
Now you're talking about pretty big money here if you want an analyzer.
I know. The new digital ones are quite costly, but I think we could settle for an old analog one.
So if you were to get a donation by somebody, you wouldn't be unhappy about that?
Not unhappy at all. We would certainly pass this information right back to the public where it belongs.
Okay.
The other possibility is here, and you got to consider this, no matter what radio wave it happens to be, I really agree with Stan Friedman when he talks about SETI as being silly effort to investigate. What advanced civilization, especially when we have a physicist that's telling us these are 80 million years older than we are using radio waves to for some kind of a communication or data collection device? That's preposterous. So there's one of two things going on if you look at it logically. Either there's a deal made where the information that's being broadcast from these objects is being received here by some earthly source, and they're tapping into the information that's coming out going somewhere else. It's a piggyback sort of thing. Or what we have is again, this is more in your area than mine, so you can probably tell me, scalar wave technology. When it comes into our electromagnetic spectrum, we're getting a harmonic that looks like a radio wave, but really may not be.
Well, that's testable. I mean, that's very testable.
And we know that scalar waves are faster than the speed of light. And Tom Ballone, the physicist in Washington, testified before the committee that this is a way to communicate in deep space. And you don't have to wait for 4 years to get your answer back.
Well, I deal in radio waves that go at the speed of light or just a touch below it, not with scalar waves. So I don't know a thing about scalar waves. You're saying they're faster than light.
That's correct.
I didn't know that had been proven.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's accepted modern technology. Tom is not only a theoretical, but he's also a mechanical physicist. So the things that he's investigated, he's already done in the laboratory. So when he comes up with these statements, it's already been done.
Well, I wasn't aware of it. I was aware that quantum movement has certainly, if there is communication, is faster than light, certainly, but I don't know about scalar waves, so maybe. Anyway, you, where do we move from here? Where would you like to go from here? I know you've got a lot of material up there.
Well, let's see. I've told you some of the things that we found in the objects that we've removed with more modern techniques. Let's hit on a few other ones. Some of the things we understand, some of the things we don't understand. And when we see the carbon nanotechnology involved with these orthorhombic crystals, we know that crystals, since the beginning of radio, have been a very important device for the receiving of radio frequencies. So this is this kind of advanced crystallography, if you want to put it that way. But we also see objects that we don't understand. We see gold spheres that are about 4 to 10 atoms in diameter. We don't know what they're for. We find other inclusions of metals that we don't know what they're for. I told you about the one atom apertures.
Right.
We're not sure what they do.
Dr. Lear, if I can, let me drag you back to the question I asked, and that is, and you said it was a good one. What do you know about what these people report? These people who have things in them, are they being told things? Are they aware of some communication that's being made with them? In other words, I'm looking for some clue to what these things are doing.
Okay, I'll let you have it. For the full bag, Now, sure. Scientifically, which I like to stay with the scientific approach, opinions, are
but,
fine.
But not all of it has to be. I mean, if people are reporting that these things are controlling them or giving them ideas or communicating in some way, I understand it's not scientific, but I'd love to hear it.
Okay, well, we're looking at a different ballgame. Number one, why is the abduction phenomena going on in the first place? We have to
okay.
go back
All right.
to that.
Let's do it.
We know that, and I've been in 42 countries in 7 years, so it's relatively the same in the United States as it is in Brazil or in the Middle Eastern countries or in Africa. It doesn't make any difference. Some of the entities that are seen may be a little bit different, but 99%, I would say, of all abduction cases involve the taking of ova and sperm. Now, whoever is taking this thing doesn't work for the cooking channel, and they're not making omelets. Yeah, so obviously there's, you've got to theorize there's some kind of a genetic experiment going on.
And I don't want to hear about sperm in the cooking channel in the same sentence.
sorry about that. Couldn't resist. But anyway, so there's some genetic experiment going on. And I think it's an experiment, which I partially agree with David Jacobs. I think the human race is being altered. And I can give you a number of instances where this might be a factual scenario that we are witnessing now. I remember years ago, if you remember John White, who used to put on the conferences in Connecticut.
Yes.
He coined the term Homo noeticus, and he said that the human race was eventually becoming Homo noeticus. I think that's what the kids for the last 50 or 60 or 70 years are becoming. They know things. They know things without
you're right.
learning.
I know. So many people have said this, Doctor, and they're called by various names, but I think it is fair to suggest that many, many children currently alive are of a kind of a different what's the right way to say it without offending
species.
Somebody well it's, almost
it's,
yeah.
It's Homo sapien becoming Homo noeticus. It's an advanced civilization. And
all right.
I think there's a lot of examples, if you want to look at the world picture.
All right, doctor, hold it right there. We're going to take a break. It's going to be about, it's a longer one. It lasts about 5 minutes or so. So just relax. Let me tell you about the Senta Ally portable speaker. Listen, Dr. Lear is a physician, a surgeon, and he removes implants from people and then has them examined. So this is pretty wild stuff. There's no question about it. I don't know what leads a physician down this path. In fact, we'll ask about that. But I asked him what people report, people who have implants, what they say. Are they being led in a different direction in life? Are they receiving messages? Is it in some way manipulating them? That question hangs. And the moment I asked it, Dr. Lear began talking about Dr. Jacobs thinks that, these aren't friendly beings at all. And he makes a very strong case for it. In fact, we should have him on the air, and will. And here's what I have to say, just before I bring you back on, Doctor, and that is, what do you think a cow believes? In other words, as a cow goes through life and is being raised, ultimately, to become a hamburger, it probably thinks the world is a pretty darn friendly place because it's allowed to graze peacefully in the sun, eating. It's brought food frequently. It's certainly given water and nourishment. If it's ill, it's given shots to recover from whatever is bothering it. In other words, the cow is treated pretty darn well right up until the moment that it gets a hammer on the head or however it's done and turned into hamburger. Now, Dr. Lear, is that where you were going with the Dr. Jacobs comment?
No. not really.
Yeah, but there is an analogy to be something to be followed there. Maybe they are not friendly. Maybe these are not nice gestures at
all.
Well,
let's go back to the cow.
Okay.
The cow is also at one time a calf, correct?
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed, yes.
And don't we eat veal?
Well, yes.
So a cow is not necessarily going to make it through a lifetime where he's going to be or she is going to be leisurely grazing in the pasture. He may be eaten by the time he's a kid.
Oh, it's true. But even then, up until that moment, life seems good.
Well, life seems good probably to a chicken. Look what we do to a fish. Or, let's say, a marine mammal. We pull them out of the water.
You're making my case, doctor. You're making my case.
Yeah, sure.
In other words, they may or may not be our friends. And, you know, they may have a time scale.
Well, let's say they're not.
Okay.
Let's look at how many millions of years we've been allowed to graze.
Well, again, they may have a time scale that doesn't quite match up with our clocks.
Well, why not just come here tomorrow? Well, let me put the question to you. Why wait for tomorrow? Come today. Let's do it today.
I'm all for it. Maybe. I mean, depending on what where we're headed when they arrive.
Well, I'm more afraid of what we got now here than somewhere else.
Well, that's a well-grounded fear. I would say.
Not the greatest thing in the world.
I know. All right. So anyway, again, this question, have you talked to people who have had the implants and have they had anything to say about the way it is seemingly apparently affecting their lives? Or maybe it isn't at all.
That's my point. It is
okay. You're hitting, doctor. You're hitting touch tones once in a while by mistake.
Excuse me.
You're hitting touch tones. You know the tones on your phone by mistake.
No, I'm nowhere near the dial pad.
Really?
Absolutely not. I'm at least 6 feet away from it on an extended cord.
Damn NSA! What's the matter with those people? All right.
We'll let them hear what we have to say. They're tapping in everything anyway. Anyway, back to where we were as to what is actually being emitted from these objects. I think it's data. And I think the data is that's where we were heading before I made the comment about omelets. But okay. Since if we agree that it's a possibility, And again, I want to say, and I've said this over and over again all over the world, if anybody gets on the air on anybody's program or in a public place, a public forum, and tells you they have all the answers, then my thing is you better put a finger in each ear and run as fast as you can go.
Oh, if you don't have all the answers, I don't even want to talk to you. It's impossible to have all the answers. So I'm afraid that puts people in a specific category that wouldn't be a good interview on the show.
Yeah, well, that's why I kind of like to stay with the scientific approach. There's things that are theoretical, which you're allowed to do, and things that are not. But even things that are theoretical still have to be proven.
Right.
So that there's data. You know, that we know there's a data stream coming out of these objects. And I believe that the data has to do with the changes in our DNA that are now occurring on a regular basis.
Okay, so you don't think it's going the other way, doctor. You think the data is outgoing and it's a monitoring sort of thing, not so much incoming and controlling in any way.
100%, because I'll tell you, I've talked to specific cases, a lady, for example, in Brazil that had an object, and she was told by the folks that put it in not to have it removed. And she asked them if it was a locating device, and they just showed her a bug that they stopped in a beam of light in midair. And we said that we can track this bug anywhere on this planet that we need to track it, and it doesn't need a device. And then shortly after that, I heard from some of the leading geneticists that we now know that all DNA, whether it's human or animal or whatever, all DNA contains its own specific electronic signature. So all you have to do then is be smart enough to build a device, and you can pick out anybody on the entire planet or anything. So they don't need them as tracking devices. Behavior control does not need a device. If you've been abducted and they look into your eye and they suggest things to you, they can block their memory, they understand the neural network, they know how to place things in your mind, they can make you see your dead relatives or whatever else they want to see, or they can make you see them as clowns or whatever. I get it.
I get it. So it's all outgoing data, and it probably has something to do with genetics, but they're clearly monitoring something. And
absolutely.
And again, I would ask you what are they monitoring, but you wouldn't have that answer, of course. You couldn't.
Well, my answer is that it is the change in the genetic manipulation that's going on. Is it a successful manipulation or is it not? If we know that DNA gives off an electronic signature, it probably gives off information according to the DNA stranding.
Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? Well, one would imagine that a DNA change is a painfully slow thing to attempt to monitor unless you're affecting it in some way. So you're suggesting there's an abduction, there's a change made, and then they're monitoring that change with that device.
Right on the nail's head.
Okay.
Now, I want to modify that by saying, I've got thousands of abductee cases, and a lot of them see grays, the typical, bumper sticker, black-eyed grays.
Right, right.
A lot of the things like what we looked at in the Comburgus footage, by the way. So anyway, we see these grays and we look at them and we lump them all into one group because we're not astute enough to know that one set of grays may come from Zeta Reticuli and another set of grays may be us, 100,000 years in the future. So we don't know one from the other. We look at, for people of skin color from various countries, and to Caucasians, they all look the same. Can't tell the difference. So we group them all into one group. So when you say grays, I think that's a misnomer, too, because there may be grays, 20 different races of grays visiting here. Maybe they don't all have the same procedures that they're doing. Maybe it's only a certain group that's doing abductions. Maybe David Jacobs is 100% on when he says there's a group that's making hybrids. I don't argue with that at all. All I'm saying is that the situation is so complex that the greatest possibility is that there's a number of things going on at the same time in relation to the field of alien abduction.
Mm-hmm. Well, what you've said does make sense in terms of abduction, implant, monitoring. Just basically what we would do, I guess, and that kind of brings up another subject. There are many people, Doctor, who say this is all some kind of big cover, and it's our own government, God help us, doing these things to us. And your reaction to that is?
I believe, that $63 trillion has been spent on the black budget accumulated total. I believe that. But I also believe that when it's said that they may be 100 years ahead of academic technology, I think that could very well be the case, too. I think that we may be flying in space somewhere around our solar system, but I don't think we've left it. So we do have some advanced technology. In fact, Senator Gravel in this hearing admitted, you know, in front of the witnesses and all the other people that were there and on streaming video, that we have our own space fleet. Now, that's quite a, you know, admission coming from government.
It certainly is. I guess he actually said that he believed that was the case. He thinks it could be the case, or what?
That is the case. And you
that
can,
is the case.
Yeah, if you go into the archive, and I think it's still up on the Citizens Hearing, you can get to the place where he makes that statement.
Wow.
So do we have the abilities to do these things? I think to a certain extent, but, you know, just like when the object that went over your head, you know, you could say, well, maybe that was some secret military thing, or maybe it was from somewhere else. But when you take the Phoenix situation and you have people reporting that one wingtip is over one mountain range and the other wingtip is over another mountain range.
Right.
I don't think that's from here.
All right. There's great argument about this everywhere I go, and that is, whether or not the White House, the president, actually, has knowledge of extraterrestrial presence here, or whether this is the kind of thing kept from presidents, or just some presidents.
Ah, what a wonderful and timely question, because I have my little pointer here on the website, artbell.com. And if the folks would click on the OSTP report given to President Obama, they will see a surprising document that answers your question in its entirety.
Where is it? Where is it? Now I'm the one saying, where is it? I'm in your photographs, your pictures. Is that where I need to be, or...
No, you've got to click on the OSTP report, which is before that.
Okay.
Okay, show references, images for dark matter, Comburgus Turkey UFO, full image analysis shows occupants, and right below it is OSTP report.
Okay, got it, got it, got it. I've got it.
So you click on that, you'll see it says Black Vault, and then the Executive Office of the President, Office of Science, Technology, Policy. And this is dated March the 22nd, 2011, and you can see that certain names have been redacted, and this is in response to John Greenwald, who now has a huge number of documents on the Black Vault. He's the one that procured this for me. And the article is written by James C. Kallenberger, who is the head of this committee. And if you go down the report and enlarge it, makes it easier to see, you'll see that there's an entire report on me and the work that we have done with the implants, and how this was done at a time when Mr. Obama was looking for funds for his national health care plan. And, for example, it says, for just the facts, UFO investigators Lear and Mosier is one of the scientists that was previously on our board, offer compelling news of 2009 ex-conference press conference, hard evidence that can be analytical and results point towards the non-human origin of the devices. So President Obama, is it in the White House? You bet your bottom dollar.
All right. Dummy me doesn't have Adobe Reader loaded, so I'm doing that. So he knows exactly what's going on.
Exactly. And if you want me to add a little more icing to this cake, when I arrived the first day at the citizens' hearing, I was met by Congresswoman Carolyn Kilpatrick, who grabbed me by the sleeve and took me aside and said, there is someone who would that's here that would like to talk to you for a few minutes if you have time. So I said, well, of course. She didn't tell me who it was, and I had my assistant, Linda, with me. And so this was at the press club, and so she took me down to the bottom floor. We went to the little restaurant there, and as we noticed when we walked in the door, there were some very large black folk, very well-dressed in suits, with a curly Q wire going into their ears, talking to their wrists. And we then were led around the corner to kind of a private area where there was a table set up. And who was sitting at the table but none other than Minister Louis Farrakhan.
Wow.
Now, Minister Louis Farrakhan had invited me and several other guests a few years back to lecture to the Muslim nation about UFOs. And he's been teaching for years his following that the UFOs are the wheels of Ezekiel in the Bible. So when we started giving out the information on ufology, of course mine was on the abduction situation and implants, I didn't know what the audience knew or what they didn't know. Right. But it turned out they knew just about as much as someone that was sitting in the audience of a UFO conference. And it was amazing. And he jumped up from the table. He was on the telephone. And I heard him say, you'll have to excuse me. I will get back to you soon. So he got up and he came over with a very friendly greeting and told me how nice it was for me to be there and for him to see me again. And I was very excited about the whole situation. It was totally unexpected and so on. And then he got a call from the mayor of Chicago and excused himself and went back to the table, and we went to the hearing. Well, 2 days later, I found out from an excellent source that Mr. Obama was in residence at the White House during the time of the hearing. And that the person that Mr. Farrakhan hung up on to excuse himself to talk to me was President Obama.
Okay.
So does the White House know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I've got a follow-up question. If we assume, for the sake of argument, that the president absolutely knows, or that all presidents have known for some time now, what rationale would the people who told the president about extraterrestrial presence, what rationale would they be able to present to the president to keep that information from the American people?
Well, again, we're talking about theoretical opinion, and it's my theoretical opinion that the majority of information on ufology has now passed from government, U.S. government, or any of the other government control into the hands of huge, giant, corporate world monopolies. These are industries. And I found out something also at the hearing. I thought it was quite interesting. That was the Eisenhower speech, where he warned about the military-industrial complex.
Of course, yes.
I found out from a very, very reliable source on the committee that speech was changed 5 minutes before Eisenhower gave it.
And it should have read what?
It should have read the military congressional military complex.
Military, congressional military.
Complex, right.
Complex. Well, it was pretty startling, just the way it was, frankly. But again, let's pretend I'm President Obama, all right?
Right.
And you're the one who's told me this information, and I'm saying, look here, I want to speak to the American people. I want to tell them the truth. What would you say to me?
Well, if I was in a position to say anything, you know, who am I to tell the president anything? Because all the information on this is a so-called need-to-know basis. So well,
For the sake of this conversation, Doctor, you've got to pretend to be the person who absolutely has to convince me that this information cannot be given to the American people because they're not ready or whatever.
I would tell you that, number one, that it is not in the interest of this nation's security to give you this information because of the advanced nature of what is going on. And that's about all that I'm going to tell you.
Oh, my goodness.
The security of the country.
Well, then I'm just going to go on TV. I'm going to get a prime spot, and I'm going to tell the American people everything. And we'll be right back. Okay, I'm going to open the lines now. Go ahead and open the lines, and let's start taking some calls for Dr. Lear. When you think about it, this is a pretty significant topic we've got going on here. We've got a physician, surgeon, who's been removing implants from people. Implants that, when they're checked out, have turned out to be a containing matter that is similar to that found in meteorites. In other words, outworldly. Maybe it's just monitoring. Maybe it's monitoring after there has been abduction. Whatever it is, it's, I don't know, it's either good or it's really bad. I have no way of knowing, and I guess nobody really does until one day when it's all made clear to us, and that may be a good or a bad day as far as humanity is concerned. But if you'd like to call and you have a question, we've got a great phone number. They don't come any better, 855-REAL-UFO. That's 855-REAL-UFO or 855-732-5836. So, Doctor, you think that presidents know about all of this and they are told something that prevents them from going on TV and telling everybody. God knows every now and then a president needs something to take the American people's minds off of, you know, whatever political mess they're in at the moment, right? And yet they don't do it.
That's correct. And I think, you know, sometimes I feel sorry for presidents and other leaders of countries because they've lost the control. This country is, you know, our own country is not functioning now as it was set up to be, as our forefathers. I'm sure that I don't have to tell you the implications of that. But you know, they try, and some of them are maybe very sincere in doing the job that they're doing. But without the information, they're just like scientists who say, you know, I can't discuss this because I might lose my job. Or number two, look at we had one day of sworn testimony from military witnesses, an entire day at the hearing.
Oh, yes.
Which
oh, yes.
They testified they had to sign oaths of secrecy. And another thing that our audience might be interested in knowing, and I didn't know it, I learned as much there as maybe they did. I found out that they've told us that these oaths that are taken of secrecy are not oaths to the organization for which the individual works with. In other words, if they were in the NSA or CIA or military intelligence and they took an oath of secrecy, that was not an oath that was given to that particular department, but that was an oath to the Constitution. The Constitution of the United States also has the right of redress, so that every single one of them has the legal right to go before Congress and say, I'm taking it back, I'm taking my word back, and I'm going to tell whoever it is that I want to tell. And there's nothing that can be done about it.
Takes a lot of guts to do that.
Takes a lot of guts. But, you know, look at the people that are now coming forth. Lots and lots of military officers that are still around that have, guilty knowledge, and they're talking about it. So they
There's also people who have told things and end up living in Russia because that's the only option they have.
Well, there are people who have told things that aren't living anywhere.
Another extremely good point, one that we've discussed on this program any number of times. This is something so big that taking a life or lives over it, I guess it's not too hard to imagine that, is it, Doctor?
Not too hard to imagine at all. When I think of cases like Stanley Meyer and John Mack and a few of the others I know.
I said that the other day about Professor Mack. You know, people, they accept what they're told. He didn't look the right way. Boom, that's the end of that. And it was just at an incredibly, you know, right after the African thing.
Yeah.
I don't buy it.
I don't buy it either. He wasn't in poor health. He was in good health. Too much non-suspicion makes me suspicious.
Have you ever been in fear for your own life?
No, but that's just me, Art. I'm getting to be old. You know, I am old.
I'm getting old, too. I can hear footsteps.
Yeah. Well, what the heck? I'm going to, if I'm going to go out, I'll go out in a blaze of glory. I did, one of the other radio shows one night, and I was on a cell phone talking, and I got cut off the air when I got home. I thought my battery went dead in the phone. The dash lights dimmed in the car, and I got home, and the battery wouldn't take a charge, so I took out the battery, and it was fried.
Yeah. See, this is the kind of thing I'm talking about. I wonder if those sorts of things are served up as warnings.
I think so. I think if you stay within the limits or within the boundaries of what they think isn't going to bother the public or the security of I'm not going to say the security of the nation, but the security of the greedy few, let me put it that way, that you may be okay. But you.
All right. I've got another avenue I want to go down here very quickly with you, and that is, look, you just said a few minutes ago that you had shingles. A couple hours ago, you had shingles, and it kind of wiped you out financially. Now, you're a physician. You've got to be, one would imagine, making a pretty good living. And my question is this, what in the world, doctor, would cause somebody like yourself, who could have a nice, comfortable life, he's a doctor, could be making good money, and just enjoying life and laying back, to begin to investigate extraterrestrial presence on Earth and all of these UFO sightings and, in your case, implants in human beings? I mean, my gosh, doctor, that's quite a jump to take, and I'm sure a very costly jump in many ways. How did it?
Well, it was a costly jump, not necessarily because of my illness, but when I got involved in the situation, there wasn't any money to do research, so I started financing it myself.
Right.
And I've dumped a large sum of money into trying to find out, this kind of information. Why did I do it?
Yes.
That's quite an interesting question. I, was interested in Roswell when I was a kid. I remember my father bringing the newspaper and putting it down on the kitchen table, reading the headline to my mother, the U.S. Army Air Force captures a flying saucer. And then he went on into a long dissertation about You know, I always told you, honey, that you know, we're not the only living intelligent beings in this vast universe. And I stood there as a kid in the kitchen and listened to all this, and it made quite an impression upon me. And then when the headline came out, you know, it's not a saucer, it's a balloon. And my father was a very simple, practical person. You know, if you considered yourself a plumber, then you better know which way water went and the other stuff went, too.
Yes.
You know, if you were a mechanic for a car, then you better know everything about an engine. So right. I remember he said to my mother, and he was irate and furious, "Do you mean to tell me that the United States Army Air Force can't tell the difference between a balloon and
yes,
a
sir.
Father?"
Yes, sir. That's right. Oh, okay, I can understand the profound impact that would have on you from your father, no doubt about it. But what I guess I mean here, Doctor, is as you, I could understand you having this as a kind of a hobby, as a kind of a thing to occupy you when you're not professionally engaged. However, as you begin a career as a physician, to decide to speak out publicly, that's a pretty big, expensive move.
That's, you're absolutely correct. And I didn't ever expect to be in that position. I got in this through a set of synchronicities that just sort of pushed me on. I did the first surgeries as a joke. I thought, you know, this guy was so funny. He's calling these things, hey, the implants. Well, you got to remember, you know, that when I started doing this, even organizations like MOFON wouldn't accept alien abduction as a real entity.
Oh, I know.
You know, they, you know, things flying in the sky, somebody flying them, comes from somewhere else. Maybe they land once in a while, do this, do that. Stan Friedman talks. Then all of a sudden we start hearing about Betty and Barney Hill. And
that's right.
Billy Schriever and, you know, a number of the other abduct Travis Walton, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Cases, and then John Mack appears on the scene and adds legitimacy to a subject. He's a Harvard professor of psychiatry, and he's working with this guy, Bud Hopkins, and, you know, they're doing hypnosis, and, you know, these things could be real. That's about the time I got into this, and here's a guy comes along and says, "I have x-rays of a foot with alien implants on it." You know, I heard that. I turned around and laughed my butt off and walked away.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody else told me to come back. Oh, come on. Listen to what he has to say. So I did. As a challenge, I said, well, you know, if you think these objects are so unusual, why don't you just take them out and see what they are?
Even at that, Doctor, you could have kept it under wraps publicly. You didn't have to begin speaking out on shows like mine and other ones. You didn't have to jeopardize your professional career. You could have kept your mouth shut and done all this quietly.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. But, you know, again, the synchronicity took over, and I started finding things that I couldn't understand, and I had to talk to people. You know, I just found something doing the surgery. Have you ever seen anything like this before? No. What is it? Well, I don't know. You know, how do you get the shell off? How do you get the material off? I don't know. It's so hard we can't cut it through it with a scalpel. And so the word started, you know, getting around for the people I was asking, and it just began to spread until more people, you know, just started piling up. More people started hearing about it. And then if anybody had told me that I would write a book, am I going to write a book on foot surgery or something else? Yeah, maybe. But to write a book on something as strange as abduction and implants, I would have told them they were insane. So people say, you know, this is some interesting data. Maybe other people would want to know about this. And then I met John White, who was a book agent. And he becomes my agent, and I turn out writing this book. And then after that, I started out, I didn't want anybody to know who I was. I was Dr.
Of course
X,
not.
Dr. P,
right.
You know, some guy doing these weird surgeries. And then more and more and more people got interested until, you know, my name got out there, and I finally said, well, that's it. I've done it now. I've stepped over the line. So
once you're over, in for a penny, in for a pound. Okay, let's go to the phones. Evan in Washington, you're on the air with Dr. X.
Yes, Roger, Art, this is Ryan from Washington. I actually know Roger. I'm helping him. I've helped him research this case in Turkey.
Oh. Do you know who he is, doctor?
Yes, I certainly do, and I have to thank Ryan for his kindness in putting this material together in such a way that I can have it on my computer and then use it, for example, in the fashion that I sent it to you. He organized a lot of these videos and gave me information that I didn't have.
Okay. Very good. Ryan, so that is that what you're doing, organizing things for the doctor?
Well, yeah, basically everything is public information already, and it was basically broadcast all over the news in Turkey, and basically all that I've done is just translated it from Turkish to English and tried to just sort of break the news in the United States, of so to speak. But I wanted to ask Roger, could you go into more detail about you were standing on the beach, and can you describe what you saw? I mean, I think it would be important for the audience to hear that you saw entities there. You saw occupants there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, let's do that. You know, it's one thing to see what a camera saw, and it's an entirely different thing to have actual eyes on. So, yeah, good idea.
Yeah, in the first place, as Ryan mentioned, this was not right on the beach. It was kind of an elevated platform area where we could walk into like a very large patio. And there were a number of us there. I was certainly not the only one there. And as I mentioned, in 2009, there was an whole other camera crew there with Jaime Hassan and so on. But we, you know, looked at the area. The sea was calm, and the moon was very bright. And I was saying to myself, you know, after we surveyed the area with binoculars looking for light contamination and seeing what the weather was like and no clouds and so on, and the wind was a very shallow breeze, not enough to cause any distortion in the camera, although, as I said, it was mounted on a tripod. And then, so to begin with, we began looking at the moon. And so we started focusing on the moon because the moon was bright. And then when we did this, maybe about 200 magnification, we saw a bright light that was just to the left and below the moon. And so the camera operator moved that the lens over to focus the viewfinder on that bright light. And then we began zooming on that object and a little bit at a time and make sure it, you know, stayed in focus. And there it was, you know. And so I said, look at this, look at this. And then the dog started barking, and a lot of people came over, and they were astonished at what we were seeing, and they were looking through the camera. And,
all right, what about the occupants, doctor?
We were able to get tight enough on the front of the object that we could see that there was entities in these three ports. The outside of the craft was being lit by the moon, but there was light that was coming from the interior of the craft that was lighting this area where these entities were. Now, you could see through the camera that they all didn't look like the same kind of entity. And, you know, they were moving around and they were manipulating something. They were doing something as we were watching them.
All right. So, I'd like to add, I can see them, and anybody can see them. If you go to the video, you can make out the occupants of the craft. Now, were you able, with your eyes, to get any more detail? You said it was obvious they weren't the same kind of entities, but can you give us any more detail than that? Or is that out of
space? With the naked eye looking through the lens finder and the camera.
Right.
Was just about what you're seeing. Now, if you go to full image analysis under show references, you're going to see analysis of the Comburgas Turkey UFO videos, graphic analysis, and it was done by Mario Valdez, Santiago, Chile. If you scroll down the page, you'll see the first two pictures. You'll see what we saw basically through the camera was two entities which you couldn't see really distinctly. Now,
right.
And then you go down.
Not everybody has a computer. A lot of people listening don't have a computer. What was the basic analysis?
Basic analysis was that these were some kind of entities that were manipulating some kind of machinery in the craft. Now, there are other photographs or pictures in the analytical video where you can see, for example, the eyes. I mean, that's how clear it was through the camera. Mm-hmm. So all this here, I realize people don't, everybody doesn't have a computer. But
a lot of people are on the road right now in trucks, whatever.
May I interject here and say
go ahead, Brian.
You know, it might be disturbing to some people who are not used to seeing this type of thing. And people should know that it might be shocking to some people. But one thing to know about these videos is that they were given to the Turkey Scientific and Technology Board, which is sponsored by the government. And they tried to debunk it, and had to finally release a two-page report that concluded that these are not balloons, they're not models, etc. And then also, I've had conversations with Bruce McAbee, and Bruce McAbee has said publicly that to him, this is not a hoax. So, everything is pretty much publicly available now for the public. If you want to see actual aliens, actual creatures, now we finally, after all this time, actually have credible photographs, not hoaxes like we've seen in the past. And also in Turkey, Roger, maybe you could talk about the culture in Turkey. I mean, this was all over the headline news in Turkey and all over Europe and everywhere, and we didn't hear a peep about it here in the United States. That's basically the reason why I've just tried to document it here. I just documented what is already publicly available and translated it from Turkish to English. And I'll get off the phone and let the next caller come in. Great show, Art. I'm so glad to have you back on the air.
Do you speak Turkish?
No. No, but I've had to. It's been quite a pain, Art. I've had to go and use a translator, which is kind of crazy because these translators, like Google Translator, they don't translate properly.
I know.
So you have to. Yeah, I'm sure you do know because of the Philippines, but I've had tried to contact the original witnesses, and there's multiple people there that seen this thing, but to them it's no big deal in Turkey. It's part of their culture. They call them the jinn. You know, they have these underground bases there, and it's just fascinating. So, great show tonight. You're probably the first major show to break this news here in the United States, and it's just important that people know about it. So,
Ryan, thank you so very much, and thank you for your work. And Roger, we'll be back in a moment. So, we're the first to be breaking this. The translated stuff, all of it, it's up on the website. And there's a lot to go through. So if you want to know whether or not they're really here, this would be a case you can investigate until your eyes blur and you'll get real information. This is Dark Matter. Sometimes I've got to just scratch my head. Scott from Pasadena sends a wormhole message to me. And by the way, you can do that. Go to artbell.com. And when you go to the wormhole, whatever you enter there, type in, comes to me in the form of a statement or a question or whatever. And Scott from Pasadena says, hey, Art, enough of the guests who can only, whose only questions are answered by directing people to a website. Enough already. My goodness gracious, Scott. if we have somebody on here who comes on and makes claims and gives us nothing to back it up, you're screaming bloody murder about where's the proof? Where's the meat? Well, they give you the proof and they give you the meat and you complain about that. You just, I don't know. Shaking my head, Scott from Pasadena. Most of the comments, though, are very, very good about tonight's guest appearance. I mean, really good. Excellent. We are getting these elusive 1001 errors. Those are getting reported to me, too, by the same means. And I want to correct something, or maybe I want to correct something. I'm not sure. From San Diego, your guest misspoke. According to the documentary, Why We Fly 2005, it's the military-industrial congressional complex. Does that sound right, Doctor?
Yes.
It does?
Yes.
The military-industrial congressional complex, and that's what it was before it became the military-industrial complex.
That's correct.
Okay. Back to the phones we go, and let's go to Texas. And Jess, hi.
Hey, Art Roswells. I want to be very clear before I make my comment and ask my question that none of this is personal about Dr. Lear. You've always been a really good listener over the years, Dr. Lear, and I still feel that way. This is more about the credibility of a few of the things that you've said and some of the folks you brought up, because I really am interested how you feel about it. It's an interesting topic. First of all, you've mentioned Senator Mike Gravel a lot of times, and you've said that he's got a PAC in Washington, an organization that he's working on this. And I just don't think that Senator Mike Gravel is very credible. He was a senator 30 years ago from Alaska. When he ran for the Democratic nomination, he got 1% of the vote, and he made Dennis Kucinich look like Henry Clay. And frankly, you know, Senator Mike Gravel is just not the kind of guy who's going to make the government or anybody at the UN listen. But what really made me wonder, and I really want your comments on this, is the idea, and I'm a conservative Republican, but I don't think President Obama is stupid enough to talk to Louis Farrakhan about UFOs on the phone, by text message, by email, by instant message, or anything. And I just don't think that that's a very credible kind of thing, and anybody that would claim that, I think, frankly, loses their credibility instantly. And the other thing I was going to say, Art, is on the citizen hearing, very interesting stuff. You can look it up. It's all on the web. There's videos and so forth. But each of the participants was paid $20,000 for their participation. So, you know, you have to ask, even though some of them may be very well-intentioned or credible or what have you, some of the participants perhaps participated because they were paid. And I do think that calls into question some of the credibility of it. So the question really, Dr. Lear, is not about the other things that you say, which I think are very interesting and raise a lot of provoking questions. It's more about the idea that if you're serious or if the UFO community is serious about getting information from the government or having a thing at the United Nations, why wouldn't you bring in more credible people than Louis Farrakhan and Mike Gravel and some of these other folks? Thanks, guys.
Okay. Kind of an interesting question, I think, colored by personal politics. But nevertheless, Dr. Lear, go ahead. Respond.
Well, I I don't know whether to sit here and bust out laughing or what. Our caller is focusing in on things that he knows, obviously made it very apparent, absolutely nothing about. Senator Mike Gravel, no matter what his popularity rating or what he did during the time he was in Congress, was the single one person who was either the hero or the opposite for releasing the Pentagon Papers. Up until the time that Senator Gravel did this, there was one person, one congressperson at a time that was allowed in a room with no pad, no pencil, no paper, no camera, no recording devices, and they were able to look at the Pentagon Papers one-on-one, one at a time. and he didn't think that this was the proper thing to do. So after going through the rigmarole of arguing with his colleagues, he held a filibuster in Congress, and he read each one of the single papers into the congressional record. Now, that takes guts. I don't know Senator Gravel. I never met him before in my life. I don't know what his political views are, but I've talked to him extensively about things that are in existence today, the world, the government, the United States government, other governments, and he's spot on. And as far as the history of this country, from where it started with its founding fathers, he's right on. So as far as I'm concerned, he's a very credible person. Now, in reference to Louis Farrakhan, our caller doesn't know anything about Louis Farrakhan. He's probably never met the man. And if he has, I'd be very much surprised that what he's saying has any credibility whatsoever. I did meet with him. I met him personally before the conference that he had on the Savior's Week, where I gave information to the American Muslim audience that he had there. But he has his own personal experiences, as does his family, with UFOs. Now, a lot of people don't know that. It's not public knowledge. And what I found out about his relationship with the president was not from him. He wouldn't tell me anything like that. That would be absolutely ridiculous to assume anything like that. That information came to me from his guards, who obviously were some branch of the Secret Service. They operated with armor-plated, armed Hummer limousines, and they were in constant contact with the Secret Service that surrounds the president. So there's no relationship.
Right.
It's impossible.
I always found Farrakhan to be intellectually a fascinating individual, absolutely fascinating, for whatever that's worth. Now, to his question about the payment that went to people for these conferences that we're talking about.
The first thing, Art, that they said on the opening day of the conference is that we are going to get criticized because we accepted $20,000 for our appearance here at this committee meeting. Now, he says, I want you all to consider that, number one, we're retired Congress people, and we are spending an entire week here from 7:30 in the morning until late at night doing press interviews, getting very little sleep. And if you add the $20,000 that we're receiving, that it barely pays for the expenses and the loss of income that we have, because they came out and said we charge, you know, $25,000 or $30,000 for an appearance at either a Republican conference or a Democratic conclave.
Okay.
So, in other words, they put it out to the public first. They were getting paid for a solid week and more of God knows how many hours per day, and studying the material besides. When I did my testimony, when I gave my testimony, in order to stay within time constraints, I handed them at least 400 pages of material, which they had to go through the night before. So figure how much time they spent, hey, 20 grand a piece is not that much.
Okay. Well, of course, to some people it is. Pete in New York, you're on the air with Dr. Lear. Hi.
Yes. I'd like to say it's really a great honor to speak with you tonight, and I'm speaking with another amateur radio operator also. Mike, actually, I had a couple of questions here. The first one is to the doctor, and what do you feel the real purpose of all this is, and if any good will ever come out of it? That's my first question.
Okay, the real purpose of all this, I guess, to try to get to the truth. I you know, doctor?
Well, I think the purpose for what's going on is a bit... I wouldn't call it altruistic or some entities trying to do something for the human race. I think that the human race has gotten to the point where we are initiating things which reflect elsewhere in our solar system and somewhere else. Now, we know that the release of nuclear energy, the way that we've been releasing it, like in the form of a bomb, also releases a magnetic wave which comes off of this planet and leaves. We don't have the slightest idea of where it's supposed to go or
okay,
what.
Okay, we're getting an awful lot of noise from that line, caller. He's got a good point. A magnetic wave, and that is moving faster than light. There's no question about it. So detectable out there, far out there, yes. Caller, do you have something else?
Yeah, the other part of that question was, does he feel that any good will ever really come out of this?
It depends on what this turns out to be. Doctor, what do you think?
Well, I'm both optimistic and pessimistic at the same time. I think that from what I see on a world scale, and if you got to look at things all over the world and, you know, not listen to the news that, you get from the usual channels, Earth-based channels, the things you're getting now are representative of the truth. You know, you listen to the Art Bell show or some of the things that are on the Internet, it's the first time in history where people at least have the opportunity to hear the truth about what's going on. So we have to look at the world in its entirety. And you look and you see what's going on. For example, let's take the Middle East. This all started in one country, which was Egypt. And who started this conflict? The conflict was started by people less than 35 years of age who did it without a gun. They did it by using the social media.
It's true.
And it spread. It spread all over the Middle East, and change is going to take place.
Oh, it is taking place rapidly, I might add. All right, to Florida and Benjamin. Hi, Benjamin.
Hi, Art. I was listening to yours and the doctor's conversation about the UFO over Turkey.
Yes.
And I drive a semi-truck, and I don't have a computer, so I was wondering if it's after a week or so that I get home to look at some of these pictures on the Internet.
Will it still be there? I would say in a week, yes, it will still be there. There's a lot of material. In the video that we were talking about, listen to me, you can see the craft again and again and again. This thing goes on for, God, I don't know, 6 minutes and 40-some-odd seconds. And believe me, sir, you can see the craft. You can see the occupants, or that there are occupants inside. And, yes, I think in a week you'll still be able to see it.
I think you'll also be able to see it through my website, which is alienscalpel.com. Alienscalpel.com. And you can go and look at the Comburgus footage there and also the analysis. And I might mention also, Art, that on the analytical section from Mario, that was done in Chile, down towards the bottom of it, there is a drawing that was made by David Chase from an abduction case, which is very interesting. And he was able to draw the beings that the abductee saw on the ship. They were a mixture of praying mantis and grays. And the analyst chose these because out of a number of different pictures that he saw, these most resembled the ones that were on the ship.
Doctor, do you have any idea or even a ballpark guess about how many different types of alien beings are here or are frequenting our planet?
Well, going back historically, I mean, I remember the assessment that Bob Dean talked about, and he said, at that time, what was that, in the 60s? There was, 12 to 14 different races. So, It's a guess. There must be a bunch that have visited here or are visiting here or are having some kind of influence. And how do we know that there's a certain number of them that are just not here all the time? When we say extraterrestrial, it just means off Earth. It doesn't mean, to tell you exactly where they're from, whether they're another universe, another time.
As I said,
maybe there are us thousands of years in the future who have traveled back in time. There's just infinite possibilities of numbers or how many are involved. But we do know that there's probably a great number involved in the functioning of this planet. And when you stop and look at it philosophically, how do we really know? I'll ask you this, Art, if you don't mind me turning the chair around the other direction.
No, go ahead.
How do we know that the things that mankind has done here is not really being controlled from elsewhere?
We don't. We absolutely don't. We don't know.
We don't. That's correct.
It feels like we're making our own decisions, Doctor. But who knows? Certainly, I wouldn't propose to say I know. South Carolina, I believe. Corey?
Yes, hello. How you guys doing tonight?
Quite well, thank you.
Thank you. I got a question. It's more like a comparison thing. You know how we go into the wild, we track animals down, we put them unconscious, we tag them. I kind of compare that to the stories here about alien abductions. Almost.
You think we're like animals that are tracked down and tagged?
Well, in looking at the stats involved, I would say that from my experience that about 15% of abductees wind up with an implant. And, you got to step back, way, way, way back. And if what our scientists are telling us is anywhere near accurate, and we're dealing with a race that's 80 million years older than we are, how can we have the conceit, how can we have the ego to even understand the logic that a race that's that much older than we have does?
It's true. You said, Doctor, 15%, you believe, are implanted after following an abduction. But you know what? How do we know that? Because what percentage of people who claim abduction or whatever are examined carefully? In other words, I think a lot, number one, keep their mouth shut about it. I was abducted. Oh, yeah, I'm going to go right out and announce that. So I think a lot of them are not examined.
Well, I agree with you 100%. That's why I think that the Roper polls that were done were very conservative polls, because who's going to come along and pass out that information? I'm just saying that on the basis I run between 3,000 and 4,000 emails behind a week, and then I have to sift through, or I have help that does it sift through all that material and try and find out people that I really want to contact and talk to.
Sure.
But
sure.
Then when you get down to the bare bones of who sends you an X-ray and who has an object, it's about 15%. And that's just about what we do with bears when we want to find out about their hibernation habits in the winter, and the sea mammals that we put tags on and see where they go and what they eat and what their predators are. So, based on human logic, which I say is, may not be logic that's 80 million years older than we are, but at least based on human logic, that's, sounds like a pretty good figure.
All right. Our number, 855 Real UFO, brings Jeff in Tennessee. Hello.
Hey, Art, Mega Roswells. Hey, Dr. Lear, I'm going to kind of run this down a different avenue. They're collecting data on us with those implants and all that. Do you think they're trying to keep an eye on how bad we're destroying our actual ecosystem throughout the world? Yeah. And that's what the hybrids are set up for, to come in and be the next go around?
Well, in my view, I look at the situation and you know, if we're dealing with intelligences that are that much older than we are, as I said, I don't think they're altruists that are necessarily here to help the human race. I think that they're here to preserve the integrity of the universe, which we don't really understand. But the things that they're doing, for example, the hybrid program, assuming that that's true, that they are building hybrids, maybe, again, this is just a guess is all it is, but we can put forth the idea that perhaps if all else fails, you know, they may have a collection of the DNA from everything that's on this earth and plan to establish beings that will take the place of the Homo sapien.
I kind of get that feeling. It's just kind of a instinct type feeling, you know. And it just, what we're doing with our GMOs and plastics and everything else, it's basically, you know, destroying the DNA code in the human race.
Well, that's true. GMOs are doing exactly that, because when you take DNA from a spider and you inject it into a corn seed, and then you get hybrid corn that you feed cattle, and then the cattle become congenitally deformed within 3.5 years, and the plant shrinks half the size and won't take up water. I mean, you're not doing much good for the human race. You know, really, really bad stuff.
Yeah, it's not looking real good for us if we keep you know, hugging our chemist guys, you know, or it's not looking good. And, you know,
all right. No, I'm sorry. I hit the switch by mistake and I cut him off. Doctor, you know, you pointed out earlier, we're getting older, you and I. With respect to yourself, as a physician and a surgeon, where are the next Dr. Lears coming from? Where are the next? It seems to me that the number or pool of PhDs, the Dr. Max, it seems like it's getting smaller and smaller, and I'm not sure I see the replacements. What about you?
Well, I think you're right in regards to what we know. The thing that's different is maybe in what we don't know. For example, years ago, where were the Richard Dolans? Whoever heard of Richard Dolan?
Right.
So, unfortunately or fortunately, I still attend a certain number of UFO conferences, and I sit there and I listen to young guys who I've never heard of before, and I'm surprised at their intellect and knowledge. Jordan Maxwell, you know, is my age,
right,
and spent 56 years, you know, studying the way this world is put together and works. But he has a lot of students. There's a lot of students around the world that are talking about the same subjects and putting this information out to the public. So I don't think they've gained it's not fame, but it gained a name for themselves yet that
right,
they are, you know, authorities. You know, and again, you look at the books, you look at the literature, it's still being written. This is being written as you and I talk on this program.
Okay, all right. Hold it right there. We'll be right back. Going to take a break. Dr. Roger Lear, certainly a legend, Dr. Lear, is our guest tonight. Subject, alien implants. Raging in the night. This is Dark Matter. Hey, you know what I want to do? I want to open up Skype. I'm going to open Skype right now, and I'm going to open it for everybody. And so if you have a question for Dr. Lear, here's how you reach us on Skype from anywhere in the world. You simply come to me as art.bell51. That's me on Skype. Art, A-R-T, dot, as in period, Bell, B-E-L-L, 51. So if you have a question for Dr. Lear, wherever you are, here, Canada, or the rest of the world, please get on Skype and buzz me. I want to play with my Skype. And by the way, we're going to have open lines in the first hour of the program tomorrow night. I repeat, open lines in the first hour of the program tomorrow night, so please keep that in mind. All right, let us continue. And by the way, if I answer on Skype and you hear audio, just let it go. It means you're going to be coming up shortly. And by the way, those of you who do try Skype, please try and have headphone mics so that we can hear you well, or just get real close to the mic, whatever. Back now with Dr. Lear, and we go to California and Glenn. Glenn, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Thank you. I saw Dr. Roger Lear at a San Francisco Bay Area UFO conference a few years ago, and I did write down the frequencies that the alien implants transmit. I don't know if you would like me to give that information or not.
I certainly would.
I would, excuse me, Art, I wouldn't want that information on the air, if you don't mind.
Really?
Yeah. If
really, Doctor?
Yeah, if he sends them to you
You know, hold it, Doctor. I sensed earlier when we touched on that question that you didn't particularly want to talk about it then, and now I'm sure. And so instead of asking about the specific frequencies, why do you not want it on the air?
Because there are certain implications in these frequencies that to some individuals might cause problems.
Really?
And could I say one more thing?
Okay, caller, would you mind then sending them to me? I am Art Bell at artbell.com.
No problem. Can I mention one other thing real quickly about our DNA? It might be a quantum antenna, and using scalar waves riding along these frequencies for the aliens or whoever's receiving them. And I do believe that NASA and SETI and other experimental frequencies in that range are in that range that were mentioned by Dr. Lear, without getting into any specific frequencies.
I agree with you 100%, and I can mention that one of the companies involved in scalar research happens to be Qualcomm in San Diego, and they have a full scalar laboratory. So
really?
Some of the things you just got through saying are 100% accurate.
Well, thank you very much. I enjoyed listening to your show, Mr. Bell. And thank you.
Right. Thank you very much for the call. See, now you've piqued my curiosity terribly.
I will get them to you. I have no fear. Can I just make a quick announcement before I just looked at my watch. I can't believe the time has gone.
I know. It moves quickly. Sure you can.
Unbelievable. Yeah, there's a new organization that I'm part of, which is CiroInternational.com, and it's a close encounter research organization. And we're looking at all aspects of the UFO phenomena, much as MUFON used to do. This is on a basis where all the research will be turned over as fast as possible to the public. It won't be held in files and some of the other politics that occurred with some of the other organizations. Our president is Yvonne Smith, noted hypnotherapist and trainee of Bud Hopkins. We're going to have we have a meeting every other month. We're going to have one in Thousand Oaks, California, November the 9th, and our guest for that evening is author David Weatherly. I don't know if you know who David is, Art.
I do not. I do not.
Interesting fellow who wrote a book on the black-eyed children, strange intruders. He's kind of an adventurist, very interesting. I heard him before, and he'll be our guest. It's Thousand Oaks, California, at the Thousand Oaks Inn. Begins at 7:30 p.m. So those of you listeners out there that are in Southern California, we'd be happy to have you as a guest.
Okay. All right. Again, I want to specify that I've opened Skype. I hope it's working. I've got 177 recent calls, and it has not yet rung. So anybody in the U.S., Canada, or outside the U.S., you're welcome to try Skype. Prove to me it's working. It's, once again, Art, period, Bell, 51. And there must be something about it that is not functional at the moment, but I've got it open and waiting. And to California we go with Larry. You're on the air with Dr. Lear. Hi.
Hi, how are you, Art? Art, I'm a longtime listener. I live in the Antelope Valley, high desert. I see a lot of things. I worked for a large aircraft corporation for 30 years, mm-hmm. and now I'm retired, and I've been noticing that the praying mantises have been getting very large out here in the Antelope Valley. I had one the other day on my hand, and it was making gestures with its hand to me and its mouth, not going crazy. And I got too close to it to look to see what it was trying to say, and it was making small words, but I couldn't hear it. And then all of a sudden it made the worst smell. I put it back on the wall, and it took off, and a lizard went after it. The lizard caught it, and it turned around and killed the lizard. The lizard fell to the ground dead. It was, if you take your hand, and it was as wide as your fingers spread apart from the little finger to the thumb. I've never seen one that big before. So you guys talking about praying mantises as with the grays, I highly believe in UFOs, and I just thought I'd let you hear that.
Okay. Thank you very much. The world seems to be made up of two schools of thought. Those who absolutely believe, like this last fellow, and those who, you know, doctor, almost don't believe as a religion. I mean, they almost have a religious fervor about their non-belief.
Yes, that's true. I agree with that. But some of that is extended to other aspects of human life, especially here in the United States. I always said that people ask me all the time, would we be able to handle it? You know, if the public knew, would be able to handle it, or would be a panic? And my answer to that is, if a huge craft, you know, 5 football fields in length, huge width, landed on a freeway, let's say in Southern California during rush hour, how would the people react? Mm-hmm. And my answer to that would be most of them would be on their cell phones or some other form of media, and they would be calling Caltrans for the state of California to get the thing moved because they had to get somewhere or to the Rams game. They wouldn't care whether it came from a billion miles from space or 10 light years, but it'd have to interrupt your normal routine of life before there'd be some kind of panic.
Okay. All right. Let me try Skype. Let me see if we've got somebody. C. Pickle, are you there? C. Pickle is not there. Okay. Well, I'm trying. I'm getting people calling, but I'm for some reason not connecting. So, Indiana, George, you're on the air.
Hi, Art. I have a quick question. I don't know if it's a question, but Here goes. I was wondering, when you were talking about the people in Turkey being used to seeing that kind of thing, do you think that might be some sort of, prehistoric memory that might just be in, you know what I mean, in their DNA or whatever that gets them used to it? And also, comes another part of that. What about, Noah's Ark landed over there? Maybe that could have been them spreading the DNA out or collecting DNA. That was it. I just didn't know if that makes any sense or not, but I thought I'd give it a shot.
Doctor?
Well, I don't think that there's anything different about the people of Turkey than Brazil or Costa Rica or Russia or anywhere else. Like, they're basically the same DNA as we are. It's just that the government is open. And the subject is everywhere. You can read it in the newspaper. It's on a lot after these sightings, and the report had not come out of the University of Istanbul as to whether this was photoshopped footage or whether it was real or whatever.
Right.
I did a number of television. television programs, and the arguments were, you know, they argue in about a public forum, you know, right to your face. Well, you know, just because you look through the camera, how do you know it's real, et cetera, et cetera. And then afterwards, that kind of died down until the report came out from the University of Istanbul. And then, boy, we were on TV like crazy on really big shows.
All right. Well, it's my view, Doctor. I've been dealing with UFO pictures, creature pictures now for years and years and years. And inevitably, people complain about them being too blurry, not taken well. Somebody who went and grabbed the worst camera they own, or very occasionally, too good. And when they're too good, then they're always photoshopped or they've been tampered with in some manner. It can't possibly be true because it's too good. So, once again, folks out there, 1-855-REAL-UFO. That's 1-855-732-5836 or Skype. If you want to give it a try, I really, really am wanting to play with this, and maybe it's not working is what I'm thinking. But give it a try so we know it works. art.bell51. If you can manage to call me on Skype, I will absolutely take your call. Florida brings James. Hello, James.
Roswell, Art. Good evening,
Thank
Doctor.
Good evening, James.
I got two quick questions, and I'll list offline. One is, a few years back, I saw a video where they had an implant they were trying to remove from a guy's shoulder or in his neck. And every time they'd get close to it, it would move, like you mentioned earlier. I just wondered if that was you, Doctor, that did that, or if you know what happened about that one. And the other one is,
Where did you see that, caller?
I saw that on TV on one of them. It was about aliens or UFOs, one of them specials they had. And they showed the operation. And it was, like I said, every time they'd go to try and remove it, you could watch it, and it would move. And I was curious about that.
You actually saw it move?
Yes, sir. Saw it on. It was on TV on one of them UFO specials.
Mm-hmm.
And the other question is, if there is a fleet of spacecraft, does the doctor, do you know what is power in that, or do you know where the power source comes from? Was it from Roswell or from other aliens? Anything in that area that you might know about? And I was
thanks for calling. In reference to the object that moved, that probably was my case. I did a case of an airline hostess who had an object in her arm that would move anywhere within the circumference of a 2.5-inch circle. And before the surgery was performed, I could put my, and this has all been videoed, I have this, every time I see it, it makes the hair stand up on the back of my neck. But you could put your finger next to it, and after it got to know you, it seems, you could move your finger, and it would follow your finger anywhere in this 2.5-inch circle.
Wow.
When we went to remove it, there was another surgeon and myself. It took four hands to trap it, and it wasn't really attached to any undersurface structures, the subcutaneous tissue. Most of them, you know, have to be surgically excised, removed with an instrument. But this one, all we had to do was trap it, and once we trapped it, we just lifted it out. And it was about the size of a very large pea. It was yellow in color, and it had some coarse lines running up either side, and it was bivalve. In other words, it opened from the middle. It would open and close like a clam. Now, please, 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 I mentioned this on a television show, and it got shown, and I got hundreds of emails from people who said, Dr. Lear said he removed a clam from a person's arm. No, it was not a clam. It was a bivalve, and it acted like a clam. But we didn't get too far with the analysis, because most of these objects are preserved in the serum of the patient or the host. and we put it in this serum, refrigerated it, and within about 7 days, it began to dissolve. I still have the serum with the material in it. So as soon as we have enough funds, we're going to go back and do some chemistry on it.
Okay. All right. Let's try taking a call. I believe it's Mike Reagan. Is that right?
Yes.
On Skype. Well, bless your heart. I closed Skype and opened it back up again, and there you were.
I have the same problem, Art.
All right. Where are you?
I am in Central California.
Okay. Get good and close to the microphone on the computer.
Okay.
Very important. And go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah. My question was... to the doctor, and it's kind of a goofy one, but I see the lights on the aircraft. Number one, you wouldn't think that they would need the lights. And number two, that is, I can't remember if that was during the Gulf War. Why didn't U.S. Aircraft would pick that up or be interested in it?
Okay, now you're talking about lights on UFOs, right?
Yes, on the images that the doctor provided on the site.
Okay, yeah, pretty good question, doctor. Those lights, and thank you very much, Jack, for calling. Those lights are indeed interesting, and a lot of people have asked that very same question. Why do UFOs need lights at all? In fact, it just calls attention to them. Of course, maybe that's what they want.
No, but I do have an answer, and it comes from some extensive conversations with physicists. The human organism, particularly, you know, Art, that your cat can see things you can't.
Right.
So the human organism... the eye is only excited by certain electromagnetic frequencies in a visual spectrum. So what we perceive as light is mostly not light. These are energy fields, and we're seeing different energies and different colors. And this is the same thing that's true during the abduction phenomena, where someone is usually... describes a bluish white light that comes down mm-hmm. over them, and they float up in the light. It's not light. It's a beam of energy, but because our eye only looks at certain degrees of the electromagnetic spectrum, we perceive it as light. How many people have looked at the undersurface of triangles and said there's a light in each corner and a red one in the middle? Well,
I would be a person like that, actually. Not in the middle, but
okay.
The one I saw had lights on each end of the triangle.
Right, and that is what we perceive as light, but it's probably energy, and we see the light form.
Okay.
So when this craft was approaching, you know, it was probably moving, but when it became stationary, those lights disappeared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I noted that. Jack on Skype, you're on the air.
Hello, Art Roswells.
Thank you. Where are you?
I'm in Seattle.
Seattle. Okay, excellent. Yay, Skype is working now,
wow.
Finally.
I'll tell you later. Is Dr. Lear there?
Yes, yes.
Yes,
hello,
I am.
Dr. Lear, I've been a fan of yours for years.
Go ahead, Jack.
I can't hear Dr. Lear.
Dr. Lear, say something.
Yes, Jack, I can hear you.
Can't hear him at all.
You don't hear
that's
him?
Okay. No, not even remotely.
Ooh, that's not good.
Hello,
I'll
Jack.
Ask my question and then take my answer off the air.
Okay, go ahead and pose the question.
Okay, is Dr. Lear aware that there's this large hexagonally shaped vortex at the North Pole of Saturn, rotating at a period of 10 hours and 40-some minutes? It's supposedly the same period as some sort of radio emission from the planet.
Okay, we'll take that. Have you heard of that at all, Doctor?
Yes, I have. And in fact, I had some extensive conversations with Norman Bergram, who wrote the book Ringmakers of Saturn. That's one of the features of Saturn, which he has talked to me about. Also, it involves the Beta Ring, most of the rings of Saturn continuously around the planet, except for the Beta Ring, which starts in one area, goes around, meets the same area, and then turns around again and goes backwards. And at that spot, there's a rectangular object. So there's some mysteries about Saturn, which undoubtedly go down in ancient history.
Okay, let's try it one more time on Skype. Daniel, you're on the air with Dr. Lear. Hello, Daniel. Going once, going twice, gone. Daniel is gone, okay. Let's go over here. I think I got the problem fixed. I hope I did. Patrick in Ohio.
Hi, Art. How are you today?
Very well, thank you.
I just had one. I had one question earlier, but he answered it, and that was I was going to ask how widespread it was with the implants and the abductees, and he said it was about 15%. But I was going to ask again about he had mentioned the hybrids. How would that tie in with the Platinum Children, or do you know anything about that?
Well, the Platinum Children is just the name, as Art mentioned before, for a new human, which I prefer to call Homo Noeticus, but they're called Star Children, Millennium Children,
right.
And on,
that's
on
right.
And on.
Many names.
Does that have anything to do with perhaps abductees being taken and the ova being taken from the woman and the sperm being taken from the man and those being created and sent back down to us, or?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I think that's exactly the situation that's going on. They're producing a different kind of human being, which I hope will have a better consciousness so that they're better caretakers of the planet and each other.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much, caller. We are right up against a break. Got lots of people now calling on Skype. How about that? Dr. Roger Lear, a legend in this time, is my guest. He's a surgeon, a doctor, a surgeon, removes implants. It's quite a calling. We'll be right back. All right, I'm actually kind of excited, I swear. If I had more time, I'd keep going tonight. I don't think I'd stop at the top of the hour. Really finally got Skype going. Check it out. Here comes King all the way from, I think, Germany. King, welcome to the program with Dr. Lear.
Yes, sir. It's great to hear from you.
Where are you, by the way?
In Stuttgart, Germany.
Stuttgart. Okay. Excellent. Well, you're on the air with Dr. Lear.
Yeah, Dr. Lear, it's great to hear from you.
Oh,
I was wondering about if you kept any of the devices you removed from the patient.
He's asking if you kept them, doctor.
We keep all of them until the very, very end when they are a very tiny piece, which is left over after going through the fires of research.
Excellent. Well, I just want to say, Art, that I really appreciate you back on the air. I'm a Las Vegas transplant here in Germany. And the Skype line really works.
It really does. All right. Thank you so much, my friend. And take care.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye. All right. There you have it, all the way from Germany. So it does work. It just took a little work on my end. So, Dr. Lear, you literally eat these things alive. In other words, when you get an implant, it's sliced and diced, and everybody gets a little piece that they can experiment with. Is that about right?
That's right, except we have an order that we do it. We first do all the exterior examination. For example, at one time, you may remember that I told you it was covered with a biological membrane, and it resulted in the fact that there was no rejection or inflammation reaction by the body. I think
right.
You probably recall that. Now
yes,
we realize that this membrane is not external, but that there is a phase somewhere, for lack of a better term, in which the inorganic material that the implant is made out of becomes biological. And again, this is another baffling thing to academic science. Maybe black budget science can do it, but academic science doesn't know how.
I understand. All right, let's try Daniel on Skype. Daniel, are you there?
I am here. Mega Roswell's ARCT. I do have just a couple of quick, real quick questions for the doctor. Concerning the Turkish UFOs that were sighted or seen between 2007 and 2009, did you have any witnesses that saw those UFOs enter the ocean or actually make landfall?
Not that particular UFO, but there is reports from Turkey, Australia, New Zealand, and many other different places in the world, including the United States, the coast of California off of Catalina, where UFOs, and they call them USOs, go into the water and then will come back out, break water, and do whatever it is they do.
A quick question for you, Daniel. Where are you?
Oh, I'm in Portland, Oregon.
Portland, Oregon. All right. Well, thank you very much for the call, and take care. And another Skype call. Here's Frank from somewhere. Hi, Frank. Where are you? Hello, Frank. Going once. Going twice. Go ahead, Frank. I guess not. Okay, we'll go back over here to the lines and say hello in California. You're on the air with Dr. Lear. That would be Eric.
Hello, Art. I've got a question for you. This is the second time I've actually got to talk to you, but I have listened to pretty much all of your shows, and all your guests give you a lot of information in regards to UFOs, and I hear about different people that disappear or die of different circumstances that everybody thinks is suspicious.
Right.
My question for you is, and your guests, do you guys ever worry about your own safety?
I can answer for myself. There have been a couple of times over the years, and I don't really want to talk a lot about it, but yeah, there's been a couple of times. How about you, Doctor?
Yeah, there's been a couple of times where I've been aware that there are external influences that may be rather deleterious to my existence.
Right, and probably better not to talk a whole lot about it. Kentucky brings Debbie without a lot of time. Hi, Debbie.
Hey, when I lived in Indiana, just barely north of Louisville, I was taking care of a sick horse, and so I woke up at 3 in the morning and like, oh, God, I got to check on her. I run out. It was very rural, a map die. And there above the tree line, about 100 feet, two white lights with a red that they were touching and silent. And that made me wonder when the doctor said when they're stationary, you don't see the lights. It was floating stationary. And I looked at it for a couple seconds, and it slowly went to the left and made a right angle and went from zero to 3,000 or more miles per hour instantly. So fast, in fact, when I turned around to see where it went, it was already gone. And I told my neighbor about it, and he said, yeah, there's a lot of sightings out here. I think it's because we have an air beacon. And the only people I ever met that had heard of NAV Indiana were pilots because there's an air beacon there. So what do you think?
Well, number one, in reference to the lights, I was only talking about that one case in Kumburgaz, Turkey. There has been UFOs that have been seen that are stationary, and you can see lights that are on. But in reference to the UFO in Turkey, when it seemed to have stopped, the lights went out. So at least, you know, as I mentioned before, they're probably not lights. It's energy we're seeing, and the energy dissipated or was turned off.
All right, Dr. Lear, you know, we're out of time. I'm so sorry. I could keep going. But we are out of time. It has been an honor to have you on the program. You're kind of a legend in this time. Certainly over this matter, you are the authority. And I want to thank you for joining me tonight.
Well, it was an absolute pleasure, Art. And I'm really sorry we didn't get to touch on the Virginia case because there's some new stuff. And but maybe some other time.
Another night, another show. Good night, my friend. Take
care.
Bye-bye. All right, that's it, folks. I'm sorry. We really are just flat out of time. Leaving a lot of calls on the board. And tomorrow night, we're going to do open lines in the first hour before our guest. How unusual is that? And I'll have Skype up and running. And it'll be running right because I got it figured out tonight, finally. Good night, everybody.